Yeah, and can I say that I am very proud of us for nobody invoking, even as a joke, dubstep?
Oh, I mean, I roll that together with electro music in my head, but that's because yeah, I'm not going to go like dubstep Transformers.
And then I'm just.
We could have gone the whole episode without discussing it until you just brought it up.
Oh, no.
That was a joke. I'm sorry.
That's a shitty joke.
How could you?
It was real, though.
How could you?
No, but, I mean, it's not going to be in the episode.
How do you know?
Oh, no.
Fine.
Ladies and gentlemen, this is Vangelis. This is WTF and TFW. I am coming to you pre-recorded live from upstate. Joining me once again is Gog Dog.
Happy Black Friday.
Happy Black Friday.
I think we recorded on Black Friday last year. In fact, I was thinking about this earlier today, and I didn't actually go back and look, but I'm pretty sure that the Odd Team has recorded every Thanksgiving year since we've started this.
We have? Man.
Yeah.
I especially remember because the first Thanksgiving that came around, nobody wanted to change the recording day, so I wasn't on that one.
Aw. Joining
I think
us.
That was the first one I missed.
Joining us, and as you heard, is also Seth Buzzard.
Hey, what's happening, fellas?
Hey, happy Black Friday.
Hello, Friday.
How's it going?
Oh, I don't know. Tired. How did it today?
Yeah.
And there was something I was going to ask you, but I thought maybe I'll wait until the recording officially started.
Ooh.
And then ask during this little opening intro part, and now I can't remember what it was.
Ah, crap. Well, I can say that, you know, keeping up with our fine tradition of recording on Black Friday, I've added something new to the mix, which is that I actually experienced Black Friday firsthand.
Dun, dun, dun!
At 5 p.m.
Do we want to make a Black Friday segment right here off the top?
That's all I really got. I didn't see anything crazy. Because I went out at 5 p.m., which is after everyone was being crazy.
I left a half hour early for work and just went to Staples because that was the only store doing any kind of deals that was on my way to work. And in years past, I had gotten there earlier, but our hours are different now. So all the big awesome stuff was gone, and the crowd was mostly died down. There was a bunch of people milling around the store, though. And I just got a couple 32 gig SD cards for $20 each.
Oh.
And a 16 gig thumb drive for $6.50, I think. $7, whatever it was. So just got some portable media. Real cheap.
Excellent. Gog, did you pull any door busters, as they call them?
I actually went and did my only Black Friday purchase on Thursday night, which like Walmart opened.
That's doorbuster time.
Yeah, it was doorbuster time. It was very strange because I've worked every Black Friday for the past 10 years because I've always my previous job I had always gotten Thanksgiving Day off, always had to work the following day. So this is the first time that I've worked for a company that automatically gave you both days off and instant 4-day weekend. So I'm like, oh, I kind of feel obligated to at least participate somehow, regardless of how I feel about the entire phenomenon in general. But I kind of want to do it just to do it. But the only – I looked for some Black Friday deals, and I mean, I didn't look very hard. Most of the stuff that I was interested in you could get online, but the only thing that I was really interested in was XCOM, the popular turn-based tactical strategy game that's been out for a couple months. I've been wanting to play that for a while, and so I had heard a few weeks ago that there was going to be a Walmart Black Friday deal for, because it's still a $60 retail game. It hasn't dropped. So Walmart had it on sale for $25, and I'm like, okay, yeah, that's something I'm interested in. So, yeah, I went there. It was like 7 o'clock my time, 6:45, 7 o'clock that range, and they had a bunch of like end cap pallets staged, still wrapped in shrink wrap, with signs all over them with various times. Like, this one, you can't, no one opened this one until 8 o'clock. No one opened this one until 10 o'clock. And I'm like, oh, wow. Like, they're, like, the Black Friday stuff hasn't even technically started. And so all the Walmart people were walking around wearing shirts that said event staff. And every once in a while, there'd be a police officer. And so I was like, oh, wow. Like, I got here, like, an hour before the stuff really starts. So, like, I go up to the video game section, and the guy is the Walmart employee is scanning all the games, and anything that had a discrepancy, he was putting the sales tag on it because it was showing the sale price on the scanner. So, you know, he was like, "Is there anything I can help you with while I'm here?" And I'm like, "Oh, I was just wondering, like, is the XCOM sale, is that good now, or do I have to wait till tomorrow?" He's like, and he kind of looked around, and he handed it to me. He's like, "Here," he's like, "just don't check out until 8 o'clock if you want the good price." And I'm like, "Oh, okay." So it was like 7 o'clock by that time. Like, crap, I got to walk around Walmart for an hour. Didn't really want to do that. So I took it up to the little aisle scanner that they have on the support beam, you know, that a lot of stores have nowadays. And it rang up at $25. I'm like, screw this. So a bunch of people were waiting in line, like behind a rope. And I was like, oh, what are you guys waiting for? And they're like, oh, we're not allowed to check any of this stuff out until 8. And I'm like, oh, okay. And I walked by them and just checked out. So it worked out for me, and so I was like, "Yeah, screw that noise." Like, the price is good, whatever. It was in the system, so. But yeah, so I played a little bit last night. Both you guys are dead in my game, brutally murdered by aliens. So,
and so are some of our friends and family.
Right? Yeah. As I was telling you before we recorded, I had a Chris Vangelis Ho in my game. He died. And like several missions later, I randomly got a new, squad mate, with the last name of Ho. So I named him after your brother, and he didn't even last a single mission. He panicked, ran, and got shot in the back. So that was kind of sad. Seth was fairly successful career before he was murdered. He reached the rank of major. He was a heavy, he gunned down pretty much everything in his path until, I started getting to missions with the Berserkers, and Seth didn't. He didn't last long enough. If he had lasted a couple more missions, I would have unlocked the Carapace armor, and I think he would have been fine. But sorry, Seth. But there's always next time. I can reboot my continuity whenever I want, so you'll be back.
Yeah. All I got to say really about Black Friday is it's kind of cool to see the aftermath of the doorbuster hordes, and Toys R Us's Black Friday deals on Transformers, at least the local one here, the ones that had signs up for, were pretty dire. It was basically this huge sign that said 50% off, and in really fine print said, off those stupid little Dark of the Moon little cars that you fire at each other, and then they kind of boink up and play Rock'em Sock'em Robots, like the bot battle smashers or whatever. And I was like, so is that the only thing on sale for Transformers? I was like, yep. I was like, okay. Thanks, Toys R Us. So I went looking for one of those Masterpiece Optimus Prime end caps that have been showing up in some people's Toys R Us's, and I didn't find one. I did find a vintage boxed Millennium Falcon end cap, and that thing looked really cool. It was also $250, so I walked away from it. But the new vintage box they did for it looks awesome. Anyway, Black Friday. I hope that all those stores are in the black again. Moving on from there, Transformers. Let's talk about some concept art. We got some concept art. The first one, I think, looks pretty interesting, and it's something that I don't think I've heard of us seeing anything from before, which was concept art of characters for the Aligned Continuity Bible. In this case, it was Sideswipe. It's by artist Emiliano Santalucia. Who says that he worked on this and some other designs with Eric Siebenhaler. And it was to do kind of a take on classic characters as these new aligned continuity forms. And the Sideswipe he did is pretty cool. It's got a classic Sideswipe alt mode, and then the robot mode is this really cool mixture of movie Sideswipe and G1 Sideswipe. And I would like to see more of this stuff. Apparently, this is from this Bible. It is theorized by our own Sol Fury that it is probably the master document that this aligned continuity came from, which is for Transformers Prime, the video games, and the novels. And maybe we'll see some more of this stuff. I know Emiliano Santalucia has said on his blog that he's going to be putting up at least one more piece of art from this. And this is really cool. It's a neat, very unique style that is referencing a whole lot of stuff all at once. And I would love to see some more excerpts of this. I'm curious if Eric Siebenhaler's involvement meant that at some point this may have been toy candidacy. But I know that in the blog it pretty much states outright toys are not involved in whatever this is now a part of. Gog, have you taken a look at this? Do you have any thoughts on a lined sideswipe?
Lined sideswipe. He's interesting. I don't know if I like him as much as some of the other designs that we had seen. I think much like some of the a lot of the stuff we've seen in Prime, it takes a bit of the movie aesthetic and kind of streamlines it, if you will. This is a very similar to what happened with Optimus. Like, they took Optimus's movie design and gave it that Prime aesthetic, which is it takes the complicatedness of the movies, but the nice rounded edges, less jagged metal, less of the alien look, and gives it more of a streamlined robot look. And that's certainly what happened here with Sideswipe. He's very heavily based off of his movie. I think maybe if they would have just given him regular legs, I'd be into it a lot more. Because I like everything else. I mean, even the swords, it's like, yeah, that's movie, but whatever. It's a weapon. Like, who cares? But, like, I can deal with that. I don't know how I feel. Like, I thought Sideswipe's movie design was fine for what it was, because he was movie Sideswipe. Seeing that carried on more and more, we talked about this a few weeks ago, when they did the concept art for Prime Ironhide, and I thought that I was a little more positive on that, because there were certainly little bits of the moviness in there, but it didn't really rely as heavily on that. And I thought that was a good mix, and I'm sure some people feel exactly the same way with this. It's just I'm not into the inverted legs thing as much anymore. Like, we got so much of that in the movie. Like, every robot was, you know, the backwards knees and the bird legs, and it's like I'm kind of over that, I think, right now. So I don't know. Maybe if you would have shown me this a few years from now or something, I'd be a little more positive. But besides the legs, though, the rest of it looked really good. The vehicle mode obviously looks great. You're still based off of a Lamborghini, although a more modern one, maybe like a Gallardo. I'm not a huge Lamborghini nut, so I don't remember. But I think that's more of a Gallardo versus the older Countach. Countach, whatever.
Countach.
I never knew how to pronounce that. But
Aaron said it like a whole bunch of times last week, so it's stuck in my head.
Yeah. So, but the rest of it looks good. Like, he's good. Thank God he's not silver. Which, you know, I'm not that hard up. You know, I'm not that much of a G1er, but I do think that this design looks better with some color versus just the plain silver without any contrast. Because here you have the robot parts that aren't normally seen in vehicle mode are contrasting against the color parts, and you get more of a colored, vibrant, you know, contrasting design versus with the movie Sideswipe, it's just literally all silver, and you really have to pay attention to what you're looking at, or else it just looks like a blob of metal. So overall, I dig it. I wish the legs would have just been traditional legs, but other than that, I like it.
Mm-hmm. And Seth, how are you feeling about this Alliance Sideswipe concept?
Echo a lot of what Gog just said. Like, I agree with the legs. I mean, I think it's all interesting, but it's more movie. It with how those legs are, it's more movie style than I think Prime or War for Cybertron style. The upper body, I think, fits in all right with War for Cybertron, but yeah, the legs are kind of movie-ish, and then I don't really see much Prime style in it. It's a little too complicated for Prime. Prime is a little more simplified, but. So is this a line continuity thing, something that's still happening, or
it's the basis of current Transformers media, but it took about a year for it to really be clear that it wasn't like a hard continuity so much as a shared number of concepts.
Uh-huh.
So character designs for it are kind of an interesting thing, because that's not really what it is.
Yeah. Yeah, but it's not like an upcoming name that's going to be on packages or anything like that.
I don't think so, no. As far as I know, the aligned continuity isn't something that Hasbro is being very public about in their press so much as they are in their behind the scenes.
Yeah, I mean, and it fits in with something I'd kind of heard rumors of years ago, of like a single continuity thing.
Mm-hmm.
Yeah, and we had talked a lot about how does War for Cybertron fit in with Exodus, and how does all this fit in with Prime, blah, blah, blah. And like, things are close, but they don't exactly line up, and blah, 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 blah. But, you know, it's a cool concept. I mean, I'm not against it as an idea, but it doesn't sound like it's ever going to be anything, so.
Mm.
It's like, okay, someone did some nice artwork.
Let's hope we get to see more of it. I'd love it if they could publish that Bible once the whole thing's come and gone. Like, that would be a really juicy, thick art book to go through. But moving to a slightly more interesting piece of concept art, also from Emiliano Santalucia, who, by the way, I just realized is one of the former lead dudes on He-Man's main fan site. And, you know, don't go into it in the thread, but you go through his blog. Thanks to Jaidi, I found out about some of this. Dude had some hard times splitting off from that site.
Yeah, that was how I learned about him. And then I was very surprised when I found out he was the one that designed Thundertron. I was like, oh, I remember that guy.
Yeah, and that's where I'm going. He got clearance from Hasbro to post all of his Thundertron concept sketches and some really cool information on how he went through this process, because earlier in his blog he said, like, I'm so happy to see this toy come out because I worked on designs for it a year ago. And, you know, he was working with suggestions and whatnot from Aaron Archer. And there's some great stuff in this design sketch. These design sketches. Like, there's a series of full-body sketches showing the evolution of Thundertron's look as he started off, I think, looking a little bit more like a cloaked pirate and got kind of just spikier as time went on. There's a great head sketch. And there's also, you know, a sketch of the alt mode, which it's neat, but I find the mugshot sketch, like the close up on the head, it is making me see 100 more percentiles who this Thundertron character is just in his face. And hearing all this stuff about Thundertron from the guy who pretty much was, like, focused on designing him has now made the Thundertron toy a lot more desirable to me than it already was. This dude put a lot of good work into this, and it's so cool that that this is kind of, like, somehow tying together with my spectatoring of the He-Man fandom. I mean, Gog, you are head over heels with Thundertron. Anyone watching your Twitter can tell. So it must have been neat to just as quickly get this blog post about its design process.
Oh, yeah, for sure. And I'll talk about that more in what we got this week. But I'm just like, when I was looking at these, with this art, I'm like, oh, wow. Like any of the over-the-top pirate stuff that I was kind of iffy on in the beginning kind of left. I'm like, I see what happened with this. Like, I see where the design came from. Like the intent of everything, and it's like, yeah, like most of my negative thoughts about that stuff for the most part went out the window, because I'm like I like what he did, it's cool. And even holding the figure up, like, every single little bit of detail aside, because his original design has lots of battle damage. Like, there's chipped panels, there's scratches and dents and holes and stuff. Like, you can tell that this guy, he's been around for a while and he's been through a lot. But aside from the battle damage, which the toy doesn't have any of, it's very clean. Every single little bit of detail that you can see in this sketch is on the figure, down to like the little tiny tribal markings on the beast head, even on the sword blade. Like, everything, every single little line that I've looked at on this design is on the figure. And some of it I didn't even notice until I was like, oh, like I didn't notice that on the figure. Let me look. Oh, wow, that's there. You just have to look at it really closely because it's not painted. But it's really, really impressive how – I'd say the only real difference between the figure and the design is – in the design concept sketches are just the proportions, because the Thundertron, he's a lot more – stockier and wide-shouldered, which is probably just something that would have been really difficult to pull off in the design. But I don't see how they really could have gotten it any closer. I'm really impressed with the amount of work that they put into turning this design from something that was like you said, was probably not ever necessarily meant to be a toy, into a pretty stinking close representation. It's more than impressive. Like even though I didn't even notice that his Mech-Tech sword had a little lion on the hilt. Like there's a little lion head like on the hilt of the sword, and I didn't even notice that. And I saw this. I'm like, huh? And I picked up the Mech-Tech has that little lion head on it. It's hard to see because the whole blade is just clear blue. But I'm like, oh, okay, that's kind of cool. So,
well, like I said, like this sketch, like the one of the things I've never, you know, having just glanced at the toy once in person and seeing photos of it, I had a lot of trouble discerning what Thundertron's head sculpt was in robot mode.
Right.
And now I get what he looks like, and I feel like he looks like one of those things where seeing his eyes inked in properly has really opened up to me his attitude, and I'm like, right, this dude looks like a hard ass.
Yeah.
Seth, what about you? Checking out the pirate robot Thundertron. How are you feeling about these design sketches?
I like it. Seeing Gog's tweets with the toy, I had already been starting to get interested in the character, and the idea of him being factionless, not being a Autobot or a Decepticon, is interesting in the very least, and it's something like we've talked about so much. Like, wouldn't it be cool if there was more of this kind of stuff? And so it is cool when there is more of this kind of stuff. So yeah, I was at least interested in the figure to begin with. A little more so now. Gog put that side by side picture of the concept art and the toy in our little chat here.
Mm-hmm.
And you can see where some of that stuff is, like the details and whatnot.
I forgot about that thing with the tail. Yeah.
Yeah. I didn't even mean for that to be a side by side. I was showing like, oh yeah, I found something you can do with the tail, because his concept design has like a little tassel around his waist that goes up under where the lion head is on his chest, around that waist plate. And none of his robot mode sketches have his tail, but his tail in robot mode generally just dangles. So you can wrap the tail around and tuck it up under that plate, so it looks just like that little waist tassel. And so I had just taken that picture to show it, but then looking at the picture of having them side by side at the same angle, I'm like, oh wow. And that's not necessarily a great picture. I could probably redo that with a better one, but like, yeah, because it's kind of the whites are bright and you can't see
some of the details are blown out.
Yeah, but holding it up, like it's all there, like even all the little little tribal bits and stuff, it's all molded in, and I don't know, it's pretty impressive.
Yeah, and some of this concept art he's drawn as being way more beat to crap, with big cracks and holes and scars all over him, than the toy is, and that would have been pretty cool if he was all gnarled up looking on the toy. But does the toy have like a beard the way the concept art does? On the face?
Yes. It's just you can't see it as much because it's under the lion mane, but he does he does have a beard. Yeah. It's just the only real the biggest difference with his head is his hair doesn't go as far back, because there'd be no room for it in the way it transforms. It goes back, it's a lot more exaggerated in the art, but you can see it a lot more in hand, like when you turn his I'll tweet a picture to you, but let me tweet a picture to you of the head. But yeah, it looks like it. It's just his hair. The hair on the toy is not as long.
Has this dude been in Prime, or is it something people are hoping?
No, he's only been in the novels. Because there was the novel that was supposed to be the prequel to the War for Cybertron called Exodus. Ooh. And then they did a sequel to that book called Exiles. And I believe Exiles is the only place Thundertron has appeared at all. is in that book.
Yeah, and my not having read it yet means I literally don't know who this guy is outside of his toy bio, but I like all the pictures I've seen of him had me quite interested. His concept had me interested, and this blog post is just fantastic. Also because this means that now, like, if you want to get a designer to sign a toy that they designed, like the box or something like that, now we know specifically, hey, if you ever see this dude, Emiliano Santa Lucia, can hand him your Thundertron box and go like, hey, can you sign this, please? Because you designed it. And it would be thematic. It would make sense. And I love that about modern toys, where it's not impossible to know who actually designed a toy and where the credit can go.
Yeah.
It's really cool. I wish that there was more information along these lines about more modern Transformer toys. Like, I know Hasbro can't really do that because they're a different kind of company, but Nika is a great example of where stuff can go in that direction of, like, having full credits, on the toy packaging.
The only other thing I wanted to say about that was there was some sort of solicitation for, I don't even remember all the details now, but some sort of solicitation for Thundertron MMO version or something. So,
oh, now, in Japan, yeah.
Yeah, so now people are starting to wonder if Thundertron is going to show up in, like, the Transformers Universe aligned continuity game or something. But I tweeted you a picture, Seth, of the side of the head if you want to look at it. But so, yeah, but at the very least, like, I don't know. He might be showing up more now that he has a toy, but I don't know.
Yeah, I'm just
looking at the picture.
I'm just way, way into the hunt on some of these remaining Prime Voyagers, and Thundertron looks like a toy I'm really going to... I'm not going to say I'm going to fall in love with it once I get it, but I definitely feel a lot more into who it is. I'm still not sure if I'm to the point where I regret not buying the $35 one that I was looking at a comic shop. But, yeah, I think if this blog post had been on my radar when I was at AFX, I would have probably dropped the cash at AFX to pick one of these guys up.
Hey, speaking of Prime Voyagers, is Skyquake come and gone from shelves, or is it part of a current wave?
Hasn't arrived yet. I believe he's part of a case revision.
Yeah, he's supposed to be in the revision that has, because the first part of Wave 4 is just, I think it's just Magnus and Thundertron, and maybe a repack or something. But then there's, like, a revision, like, Wave 4.5 that's supposed to include Skyquake. Skyquake has not been sighted yet. Thundertron and Magnus have just started hitting shelves in the last couple of weeks, so.
Yeah.
In North America, anyway.
I'll keep eyes out then.
Me too. Man, I might start looking at comic shops again. anyway. That's some badass concept art stuff. You know, check out the blog. I forgot the name of the blog now. I'm going to go find the name of the blog. It belongs to Emiliano Santa Lucia. The blog is called Santa Lux. Santa Lux. Whatever you want to say.
I think that guy did some... He's done some IDW comic stuff for Transformers, too. I think.
I don't remember. Can't remember.
Yeah, but I think he's done comic work for IDW on Transformers before, so.
Mm-hmm. Yeah, no, the dude has a really good attitude about what he does, and I'm glad he's got some involvement in a brand I'm a little bit more aligned with. Let's move on to some new picks, guys. There's some interesting photos that have popped up, and I kind of want to talk about them. Seth, have you got a new picture pick that you'd like to cover?
Certainly.
All right.
Let's keep updating on the iGear Minibot situation.
Ooh.
Hey, they announced two more releases coming up.
Oh, yeah.
And I'm not really excited about either of them.
I don't know who one of them is supposed to be.
Well, the Sea Spray repaint?
Yeah, Manatee.
On the front page post,
Manatee,
they suggest that it's an homage to the G.I. Joe whale vehicle, the hovercraft. I guess so, in that now they're both green hovercrafts.
Yeah.
But Pipes is kind of... Do they call him Pipes?
No, his eye gear name is Tubes.
Yeah, well, he's a Pipes. He's meant to be Pipes. And he's kind of disappointing as Pipes. Because Pipes, it was the exact same figure as Huffer, but they just sort of changed the way you align a couple of pieces that actually kind of made him look a little different instead of just a straight repaint with a different head like all the other repainted mini bots were. So it's kind of disappointing that they didn't try to figure out some way to do that. I think where I'm at right now is I'm not gonna bother with any of the repaints of the mini bots, even though they have like retooled faces to make them the other characters. I'm probably just gonna stick with like one each of the molds, sort of a thing.
But yeah,
I wonder if they're not going to size these dudes up.
I don't. If they do, I'll be surprised, because these guys are limited to 500 apiece.
Oh, let's look at the price.
Shafter was limited to 500 apiece. Shafter was $40, and these guys are $40.
Well, Big Bad has at 70 for a 2-pack.
Yeah, upsized,
they're not going to be upsized. They're not going to be.
Yeah.
I'm kind of surprised they didn't, though.
I still don't know how I feel about the upsizing. I went into this a little bit. It might have been last episode, but I'm in the same position of not being that interested in the recolors, because I found the upsized ones just feel like small toys that have been blown up in a bad way. And
well, if they upsized them and added a little more articulation...
Yeah.
To go with the size, like wrists or something, then okay. But they're clearly inflated. Like, they were clearly designed to be smaller than they are.
Yeah.
From where those lacks of articulation are. Because it wouldn't have been difficult to put them in at a bigger size.
Even the surface detail just feels kind of inflated. It's weird. Like, I think, like, Hench is the biggest example of it so far, and the Grey Protos of the other guys, I'm not sure yet how I feel about them. I still would like to pick up one or two more of the full-on new molds, but I feel like they haven't accounted for the size change other than making them cost more.
Yeah, I'm not super into the Beachcomber. I might get it just to, but I think the Gears is still looking pretty good.
Yeah. So. I like the shape of his head.
Yeah, and, you know, it's probably going to be really hard to turn that head around with your fingers, even more so than the other ones, because it's just, I think it's cool that it's so tucked into everything, like the original toy was, like just sculpted on this big surface. So I think it's just, it's like a neat idea on how to have done that. That I'm really digging, and it just looks from the pictures, the Gears just seems a little more detailed and a little more solid than Hench had turned out. Mm-hmm. Like, it's so weird, because when I got Hench and UFO, I was expecting to think Hench was just absolutely the bee's knees, and UFO was the one that I got because they were bundled together, and I ended up thinking UFO was way better. So.
Yeah, it's so weird with Hench. I love Hench in alt mode, and I love transforming him, and I love his robot mode until I try to pose him or put him down on a table.
Yeah.
And then it's amazing how he has such enormous feet but still falls backwards so easily. Like, I just don't... The physics of it feel like something that was a major oversight, and like that's a case where it feels like if he was smaller, he wouldn't be falling over so much. But because his dimensions have all just been ballooned out, it's like his placement of weight has different properties now.
Yeah.
It's weird. And I don't hate him, but it's weird.
It was just, I was a little disappointed.
Mm.
Like, if I had less expectation going into it, I think I would have liked it better. I mean, I still think it's neat that you could spin his head around and he has like a more toy accurate face or a more cartoon accurate face, depending on how you spin it. I just think that's a neat little additional detail that would have been nearly impossible to do if on the smaller size, because man, it's rough enough trying to just fingernail the head around.
Yeah.
But like the legs do interesting stuff. I think it's really cool how the legs transform. He just needs more articulation in his arms.
Mm-hmm.
But you know, now we're talking about something that wasn't actually the picture. So,
I think it says something that whenever the mini warriors come up now, it always kind of cycles back to they look so cool, but decisions about their physical proportions have made them turn from the must-buy, easy-to-purchase, it-doesn't-cost-much line into, like, now they're $40 each, and I don't even know if I like them as much.
Yeah.
The thing that made them be $40 each is specifically the thing that makes me not like them as much.
Yep. Yeah, I can dig it. But I just feel compelled to keep discussing it as new things get announced.
Yeah. I'm curious if these guys will sell. The only thing that's really attracted me to them is that Pipes is called Tubes, which I think is a really funny name. But like, yeah. I think it's like the heights of I'm really not interested when the way they do the new head on him is it's Rager's head with a visor spray painted under his eyes like war paint, and it's just I don't know, it just doesn't work.
Yeah, I mean, with Spray becoming Manatee, it's like, because all these other mini-bots where they're doing this, the repaint, is based on what they did in G1, like repainting them, renaming them, giving them a new face, out the door you go. But there wasn't that for Sea Spray. There wasn't another release of that mold as a different character.
Yeah.
So to reach into apparently G.I. Joe, it's just kind of meh.
It's a cool idea, but it just comes off so bland because his head is kind of, I find paint wise, it's kind of lost in the colors around it. I wish that the head had been a little bit more bright somehow, like a bit more punchy.
Yeah.
But we'll see how these guys go when they come out. All we've seen so far are CAD renders. Maybe the paint work on them will end up being a lot better than it looks in these promo shots. Anyway, moving on from Mini Warriors regalia. Gog, have you got a new pick?
I'm going off of one that I talked about before. We got in-hand, final, colored, completed picks of the new Alternity GTR Prime and Star Saber. And I just posted a link. And if you scroll down, they actually have pictures of the little Race Queen figures they come with too, which I guess I didn't realize that they were coming with these before. I had heard, you know, that in the actual design of them, that they kind of had one, like, fictionally. But I didn't realize that they were actually going to make figures of those that were going to come with them. So it's kind of neat. These guys are expensive, which kind of bums me out. Like, they're $115 each, which for a retooled Alternity figure seems a little steep.
The place where it shows to me is it's something that we haven't fully said yet, but the Race Queen's part of it, but also the deco on the alt mode, I think, really adds up.
Oh, for sure. And that's also, the $115 is BBTS price, so that's the high end. If you import it directly, it's probably going to be much less. So, but either way, I still kind of want the Star Saber, just because it's really cool that we're getting a new Star Saber figure. I don't think the head sculpt is perfect. It's hard to see the detail on the head with the pictures that we got. But he comes with a unique weapon that looks like his saber blade, and that looks really cool. And the fact that it comes with like a little action figure along with it, which is something that we never see in Transformers. I mean, outside of, you know, Human Alliance, which is which have never been that great. The little masterpiece Spike Dude, which basically same thing as Human Alliance, not particularly amazing. The Alternity Binaltech Asterisk did it with the little.
And I thought that's what these were going to be. The right. Big thing here is these are full on posable right, micro man yeah. lady bodies.
Right, and so exactly. So this kind of blows my mind, and I almost kind of want to support it because I'd love to see more stuff like this in the future. I mean, maybe not necessarily, sexy little girls all the time, which I think in this case it's fine. Like they're race cars and you have like the little race queen yeah. girls that sit on the cars. Like that's fine. Like there's nothing wrong with that. I mean, very few people are going to complain about having attractive women like sit on a car unless, you know, they got a really horrible boob job. But
they look like they're going to look like gigantic women next to these cars.
Because the Alternity. OK, so Alternity is already smaller than the 124 Binaltech alternator size. And you look how small the figures are that came with those. I mean, they're pretty tiny. So there's no way that I have a hard time believing that these are going to be that small. Has it been confirmed that they're? Oh, it says 90 millimeters.
90 millimeter. I can guarantee. I have a Microman figure.
9 centimeters. Wow.
Yeah. They will. They are going to be. They're going to look hilarious next to this.
That's 9 centimeters tall. It's going to be. Yeah. They're going to be practically as tall as the cars are long. So either way, though,
Microman bodies.
Yep.
Yeah. So.
And so hopefully they won't break apart in your hands when you try posing them.
Will if they're Microman.
Yeah.
It's still also, cool. I still think it's cool, and I'd love to see them do more stuff like that, though, in the future.
I think Star Saber definitely came out way more interesting, because look at the color work they did to his from his abs down to the top of his knees to make him look like Star Saber inside a car. It's astounding.
Yeah.
Like, that is some good deco work.
Yeah. So... I like it. I mean, I like this. And like I said, I'm a little iffy on just the fact that, like, how many repaints of this mold have we already gotten, and now they're retooling it and releasing it again. But, like, this is it done right, though, I think. So, yeah. I like it. And I like Star Saber. We haven't seen Jack from him since, like, the robot, whatchamacallit. Well, we got a Kabaya kit, and we got the Robot Masters, but it's all just multiple versions of that G1 toy. So it's cool to see them go back to that character and actually do something with him.
That Alternity Diatlas was not.
Exactly. Yeah, that's what really bummed me out about those Alternity repaints is they had a great opportunity to do that, and I think those things would have sold super well if they would have put new head sculpts on those. And as it stands, I don't know anybody who bought those things.
They're currently on part of they're in several online Black Friday sales, and I've been looking at them because now they're like he's been bumped down to $35 on Big Bad, so I'm like, I decided not to because I'm sure that I'm not going to. I'm sure he'll be there for a while.
Yep. But I think I'm going to try to find a good price on the Star Saber and get this guy. Like I really like what they've done here for some reason. So they do a lot of things that I don't like, but I think the cool stuff that they've done outweighs that for me. So
I will say, I bet you if those Race Queen Microman figures weren't in there, that would have easily been $20 off the price.
But I'm fine with that, I think.
Yeah.
It's because it's neat. I'd like to see them do stuff like this more often. Just put in little stuff that we normally wouldn't get.
Yeah.
And I know a lot of people don't like it. Like a lot of people in the thread were like, "Oh my god, this is Kiss players all over again." I'm like,
"No, it's not.
It's not. It's not anywhere close."
Go look up what Race Queen is. Race Queens have been around since the PlayStation.
And that's exactly what people in the thread told them. Like, are you not aware of the concept of babes at hanging around race cars? Like, come on now. So, but yeah,
one of the reasons why dudes do race cars.
Yeah. So, yeah, I think I'm going to pick up GTR Saber. He looks cool. I like what he's doing.
Yeah, he's on my radar. Seeing the palette on his inner robot parts puts him way on my radar. Like, you know, even if he didn't have the new bits, just the level that they went to make it look like that Star Saber wearing a car is really cool. Well, I'm gonna go back to, I'm going to go to my current little habit here. For my new pick, I'm going to talk about a third-party item that modifies a piece of Fun Publications toy. This is a new Head Robots release. It's the Head Robots Skel-E-Tron. There's 200 units of it being released. It's quite limited. It's being released by high-end TFs through his Amazon store or directly through their website if you're not in America. It's the Head Robots Blood Ronin set for Voyager Bludgeon, which I actually still haven't got. This is going to be the first time I get it because I totally placed an order as soon as this went live yesterday. And you know, huge props. This was $30 on Amazon. It was $35 shipped to Canada or to any international site. So, you know, many props to high-end TFs for not going crazy on that.
High-end TFs were the store that was selling the Ghost Shooter and Minerva G1 knockoffs that I bought a few months ago.
So oh, cool.
They are a good store. They ship out things fast and...
Yeah, mine's already shipped. I paid for it yesterday.
Yeah, so they're legit.
But in case you don't know what this is, I'm not sure if they... I'm going to click now and see if they still have any available. They still have them available. Okay, so it's limited to 200, so if you do want it, don't wait too long. And this is basically the Blood Head Robot set, but it's made for BotCon, Gigatron, or Overlord. From this year's BotCon set, which had really good colors and a very valiant attempt at a new head sculpt that just didn't mesh that well. What Head Robots have done here is, to me, quite ingenious. They ran with the blue, and then they took their blood kit and gave it a lot more paint apps than it usually gets. There's actually there are some pictures detailing on the blog just how they did paint work on the head to give it some shading and some dry brushing even. And basically, they painted it like Skeletor, right down to having it be a yellow skull with green shading and dry brushing and whatnot, and like dotted in red eyes with black around them. So basically, you put this on, you replace the Overlord head with this Skeletor head, and you have a Transformers crossover Skeletor who turns into a tank and is kind of dressed like a samurai, which is funny because Skeletor has had samurai armor before in one of the many iterations of Masters of the Universe. And the thing that sold me on this was actually a silhouette that they showed where they kind of hinted at the concept, where they had this toy sitting on a throne of skulls from Marvel Select Mephisto holding the Masters of the Universe Classics Skeletor's magic staff. And it just looked beautiful. So I was like, I have the toy this goes with. I don't really care that much for the new head sculpt, and I think the colors look fine. I would love to just turn it into Robot Skeletor. Sure, let's do it. And I saw the price was $35. I know that that's pretty decent given what the blood set goes for and given how limited this is. So I was like, hey, let's do it. And, you know, worst case, if you don't use the head, you still get the new sword and cannon pieces to replace the super floppy sword that comes with the basic toy. And the packaging is a massive love letter to Masters of the Universe. It's Head Robots of the Galaxies. It has, like, the red exploding rock background and everything. It's a beautiful bit of Head Robots kit. I think this is the most loving thing they've released to date. And it's a really cool concept. So I'm really looking forward to getting this thing in hand because I like Skeletor. And the idea of Robot Skeletor is something that tickles my fancies quite a lot. Gog, you like this toy and you went to BotCon, but I believe you sold this toy.
Yes,
if I remember correctly.
Yep, I sold it before I went to BotCon.
That is the position a lot of people in the thread have stated that they're in right now.
Yeah, and it's fine. I mean, this is for someone who couldn't sell it or didn't or whatever. If they didn't really like the way that head turned out, then that gives them an option. And I think it's wise for them to only make 200 or so of them because I don't see much higher of a demand than that because it's already kind of a really niche figure as it is. And I imagine that the people who did buy them and keep them are people who wanted an Overlord just to have an Overlord because he's not a character that gets figures made. So even if it didn't, I mean, I know plenty of people that were like, yeah, the head didn't turn out all that great, but it's Overlord and I really like Overlord, so I'm happy with it and, you know, good on you. That's fine. And so I don't know how many of those people are going to pay the premium dollars to get that Overlord toy and then want to decapitate it and take that head sculpt off, basically not making it Overlord anymore. So
yeah, I weighed over it in my mind a bit, and I was like, the part I like about this toy the most are its colors, more so than its
identity.
Yeah,
and that's fine. And if I had if I still for some reason had that figure, I could totally see myself using that. I don't regret selling it off at all, but I love that mold. I think it's great. I still have yet to see it on any figure that besides the original Bludgeon or with a head robot kit or something that makes it work for me. I've seen my Toys R Us has like three of those new GDO Voyager Megatrons. I think the color on that looks awesome. The head sculpt looks decent. It looks a whole hell of a lot better than the Overlord head, but it's still hard to picture Megatron as a skinny samurai, like the bony skeleton samurai. So we have Bludgeon, the original Bludgeon, in this mold that had the skull head, and it made sense because he's, you know, skeletal. So replacing, you know, the fact that every third party kit for this guy is a skull head, like, I think that's why it works, is because that's what this body is designed to be. It's designed to be like a skeleton samurai. I appreciate the effort that people have gone to make this figure into something other than Bludgeon. It just, none of it has worked for me whatsoever, except for the other attempts at putting a different version of a skull on the body. So, and I think this looks pretty cool, but I don't necessarily regret selling it, but it looks really neat. But it's, yeah, like I said, I think it's wise that they're making this a very limited thing, because I think the appeal of this is going to be fairly small, and that's not a bad thing. This is going to be a very small group of people that would be willing to do this to this already kind of premium figure as it is.
And Seth, how do you feel about the idea of third parties getting into the realm of Transformers crossovers and just doing Skeletor or the Decepticon?
No, why not? Why shouldn't they? I mean, let's infringe on as many IPs from as many companies at the same time as possible. Who cares?
That's what's all going to do.
Yeah. Come at me, Matul.
We will. Oh, crap. We lost the shipment of your legal summons in the mail because we used Digital River. Whoops.
But yeah, I like Skeletor too. He's classic villain from my childhood. And if I had kept this Bludgeon, which I didn't, or a Overlord or whatever he's supposed to be, which I didn't, I sold mine also, I would probably stick the head on him. And I could even see people who don't have the Bakon figure wanting to buy the head, just because the head's kind of badass looking. Mm-hmm. And, you know, like, you could probably make it work with a different color scheme with just a little bit of paint, repainting the blue part, leaving the face as is, because it doesn't look like there's any in particular detail paintwork on the helmet part, just the face. Checking out the thread for the item on TFW here, somebody photoshopped Man at Arms on a head onto a bulkhead from Prime.
Yeah.
Which is pretty rad.
Oh yeah, scrolling down the thread, someone has cross-posted a lot of images, and this goes into the painting process. There's a black wash, red eyes, and a lime green dry brush on the edges. Which it's just such a nice little level of loving detail, because that it's that dry brush, I think, that is it is so clearly someone who likes Skeletor, and it makes it stand out from the existing blood set in a really cool way. I'm looking forward to getting this in hand. I really want to get the original blood set as well, but limited numbers and Skeletor kind of pushed me into this one a little bit harder. Anyway. I'm looking forward to getting this.
Yeah, and it's just continuing to be a curiosity of third-party figures making things specifically for BotCon releases.
Mm-hmm.
Well, it's these actually making me interested in those BotCon releases I wasn't interested in because they were shattered glass or something. And then turning those into something that's actually interesting.
I mean, the Make Toy Battle Tanker remolds for Botcon Toys. Those are apparently coming out next month, and that's going to be real interesting to see as well. I just find such an interesting case study looking at that stuff. Similarly, with my Shattered Glass Targetroids, and we'll see what 2013 brings us. If this is just a passing fad, or if this is going to be a bit of a running theme. Anyway, those are our new picture picks. I want to talk a little bit about Fall Cybertron, because we got some news. There's a little bit of a Q&A with High Moon Studios, where they basically said that Fall Cybertron DLC is donezo. They said that they can no longer add any more colors or characters, because they've hit the, the limits of what the game can support technically, and they apologize to Sludge fans. And as for DLC maps, they said that they don't want to do them because they feel that it'll impact the ability to find a full match online. It's something they apparently learned from War for Cybertron. Putting in paid DLC splits the player community between those who have the maps and those who don't. So basically, from that, one can extrapolate that Fall of Cybertron is pretty much done for DLC. I am not that surprised, because I don't think it's the kind of game that can pull in the numbers to support having a huge stream of DLC for a really long time. It's a bummer that it had to kind of just be stated outright, but at the same time, I guess it's nice that they just kind of flat out said it without leaving people hanging. Seth, how do you feel about this little update on Fall of Cybertron, the lack of upcoming DLC? Do you feel that the numbers might have been there to pull some more paid DLC and some more original content, or is this kind of predictable?
My guess is probably not. People tend to migrate pretty quickly from game to game, in my observation. And now, I mean, since this game came out, I mean, Halo 4, Call of Duty, those have both come out. You have to imagine the majority of hardcore shooter folks have moved on to those games. And yeah, like, risking splitting the players that are left amongst paid and unpaid maps, it would make it difficult. I'm sure it's already getting to the point where it might be getting a little difficult to find a full game now. I haven't played multiplayer for quite a while. I'm way behind on my gaming. I still haven't finished the campaign. But yeah, as a kind of mid-tier game, I just can't imagine it holding on to enough players to warrant putting out stuff.
Yeah.
Or any more stuff, I should say.
I still haven't even made a character for multiplayer in it yet. I got to do that sometime this month.
It's an easy achievement.
Yeah, I know. I heard it's a really cool character creator, so I want to have a go with it. But it looks like I'm going to immediately have to kind of rely on organized get-togethers through TFW or other such communities. Gog, how are you feeling about the end of DLC for Fall of Cybertron?
Yeah, I don't know how I feel about it. It's because I bought, I think they had two map packs for War for Cybertron. I remember buying the first one and thinking, like, nope, okay. Like, I think it was like two new maps or something, two or three. And like, I thought they were okay, but it was like, I mean, it is what it is. And I didn't mind it that much. I never bought the second map pack. And so I absolutely resonate with High Moon said about splitting the community, because I didn't really want any new maps. I had heard that from some people, a lot of the feedback on that second map pack is that it wasn't really all that great anyway and wasn't necessarily worth the price. And then I found myself, like, in online matches, I'd play a match, then we'd switch maps, I'd play a match, and then it would switch maps and say, you don't have this map, and kick me out. And I'm like, oh, okay. And then I'd join a match, and we'd sit there for 5 minutes waiting for enough players, and then it says, you don't have this map, goodbye. And I'm like, oh, okay. And I mean, I don't know. Like, if you add options to the lounge to say don't use the DLC or whatever, but then that, I can understand why they wouldn't want to do that, because then it just doesn't really give people an incentive to necessarily to buy the DLC
Yeah, why would you buy it just to have an option to not use it?
Right. So I mean, I understand both points, but it's like in the end, like, I mean, what they're saying is not untrue, and there's a lot of angry people in the thread talking about this, like, oh, you know, but it's, you know, DLC is never, that sounded way more disrespectful than I meant it. I didn't mean it like that, but it just, you know, people are really seem to be up in arms about it, and I'm not saying that you guys are just throwing poo or anything, but I mean, you know, it's. A lot of people are saying that they regret even buying the game if High Moon's not going to support it. But you got your $60 worth out of it, and anything more you would have had to pay for. So you're not out anything because you haven't paid for that. And unless DLC is announced before the game is released, there's never any guarantee that there's going to be anything like that. But you still have the single player and the multiplayer that you got, and you know, people are they going to play it or they don't. What I want to know though is. Or what I'm interested in seeing, though, long-term, because War for Cybertron had people playing it regularly all the way up until the release of Fall of Cybertron for 2 years straight. There was never a time when I went in and couldn't find people playing multiplayer. I mean, maybe some modes weren't as great, but, like, Team Deathmatch always had people in there. You could always find people playing it. There's been plenty of games over the last few years that have been released that, 2 years after it's gone, you can't even have enough people to form a game. So it's going to be interesting to see if Fall of Cybertron has that staying power, or if it was just the newness of War for Cybertron that kept it going as long as it did. So there's also the fact that High Moon Studios is working on a new game. What is it?
Deadpool.
Deadpool. That's it. Yep. So they're. But at the same time, like, I don't know. I wonder if it's the same teams or what. But I mean, I'm sure High Moon Studios is not this huge studio that can work on like three or four titles at the same time. So I imagine that probably has a lot to do with it. If they have a contract to create a new game and it's got to be done by a certain amount of time, I mean, maybe they're not willing to put the people aside to work on DLC. And that's, you know, that's just a part of business. And it's not like, you know, I think there's a difference between like putting out a game that's like super bugged and doesn't work right. And then the developer saying like, yeah, you know, there's bugs. We understand, but we're busy and we don't really have the manpower to put it, because that's just saying that you're not really, that's not supporting your product. It's another thing to say, like, yeah, we're not going to keep putting out brand new paid content, you know, over and over. I think those are two separate things, and I think one is kind of a-hole-ish, and the other is just not. I mean, and
it's a reality of the right. not really the business, but it's a reality of what right. This game is in
yeah. And I think the greater picture of the business. I think it would have been a much different story if High Moon said, absolutely, we have multiple map packs. You know, they're going to be released over the coming months or something like that. And then they turned around and said they didn't. And I mean, I don't know. I didn't hear anything like that. But if that was the case, then, you know, that's kind of a different story. But if there was never any word about DLC from the beginning, and then they just kind of say, like, yeah, we don't have anything planned. Sorry. I don't know. I don't think it's a reason to be mad and say this company is screwing me over as a customer. I'm never supporting them again, because I've read that based on the fact that there's no DLC for FOC.
Am I the only, like, I don't know. Maybe I just don't get multiplayer High Moon Transformers games, but I'm like, the money I paid was primarily for the single player experience in those games. Like, not to you know, yeah. Poop on the multiplayer or anything, but it's like. Like Fall of Cybertron, I played the single player and I was like, all right, I'm pretty much done the game. I can go and I'll jump on multiplayer sometime for fun. But yeah. I felt like I paid for a single player game that happened to have multiplayer in it. And
I played a lot of the multiplayer. I mean, I played hours and hours and hours and hours of over the course of many weekends in War for Cybertron. And I still thought that the original maps that came with the game were the most used and generally the best ones. So, I mean, I think there was one map that I really liked playing Scientist, because it had an abnormally tall ceiling limit. So as a flyer, and it wasn't like an outside environment either. It was inside. There were tunnels and stuff, but there was several rooms where it was awesome playing as a scientist because, I mean, if once somebody found you, you were in trouble, but there was all sorts of little hiding spots and it was really cool. But outside of that one map, I mean, generally the maps that I played the most on, had the most fun on, were the ones that shipped with the game. So whatever.
Yeah.
One thing Jeremy or Gogdog was saying about them maybe not being able to handle working on multiple games. I mean, they're just coming out of a situation where they did 3 Transformer games in a row, 3 years in a row, and they can do that. And from going to GDC, and there were different leads on the games, like Matt Tiger only worked on the Cybertron games. The movie game was a different guy that was sort of the head of that project. So they have enough people clearly to work on, like, in shifts on a thing. Like, the first Cybertron game comes out, then you have this other group working on the movie game while the Cybertron A team, let's call them, is developing the second one. And that movie game in the middle didn't really have multiplayer, did it? I don't remember having multiplayer.
I can't remember.
It had multiplayer. I remember people really complaining about it because there were no classes. It was just choose a character.
Yeah.
And that
was a more stripped-down version of everything. But all 3 games have a lot in common. Like, the general control and the way you play it is basically the same. The engine is an iteration on itself. But if they're going into a whole different property with Deadpool, like, a Deadpool game shouldn't play the same as these Transformer games have. I mean, you're not going to turn into the Deadpool mobile, which can either drive on wheels or hover around.
or will you?
Truckpool.
That would be awesome if High Moon has been doing Transformers games for so long, they don't know how to do anything else. Like, no. No, guys.
3 years and they shut down all other abilities. But yeah, so it seems like they have enough people to do 3 of the same type of game in a row. But I don't think that they would be able to and really keep wanting to support this. The War or the Fall of Cybertron, when they're working on this other property for a different master. Like, they're going from doing a Hasbro property to a Marvel property. So, you know, they might not even be getting money from Hasbro anymore to, like, their contract could be up. And if their contract's up, then there isn't much motivation for them to keep supporting this property for these people anymore. Because it's not theirs. It could be a completely different story if this was their own original IP. They might be a little more interested in supporting the multiplayer going onward than what, you know, is kind of contract work.
Mm-hmm.
Yeah. And, you know, it could also be Activision's call in the end. It could be like, they might want to keep making stuff, and Activision going, no, that assignment's over. Now we need you to do this.
Yeah. And I mean, like, that's not something that High Moon can really say in a Q&A either. Like, there's a reason why the answers they gave were more oriented in, like, our limitations and, you know, what we took from the previous game. Because they can't just go, like, well, Activision said no.
Oh, yeah. I don't know how much of that I actually buy of them saying, like, yeah, there's a technical limitation. We've hit it. Like, we just can't add any more colors or parts or anything. Like, what this isn't – like, I remember, like, in the NES, like, the highest number you could go up to was, like, 255 because of, you know, binary or something. Like, it was, like – If you look at numbering systems on NES games, there were many, 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 many games that had a number limit of different statistics. It was 255, and that was a physical limitation. And that's a bit of an exaggeration, but, like, it's, I don't know if there's, like, a hard limit of them saying, like, yeah, we physically can't add anymore. It sounds more of, like, them saying, like, we're done. We're just done. here's kind of a reason, and that's fine. Like whatever. Oh,
there's a post in the thread that I haven't followed up on how accurate it is because I haven't really kept up with that stuff. But apparently, all the DLC release so far had to do with content that was buried in the disc somewhere. So it seems the theory is any further DLC would need to be newly downloadable assets that are not on the disc in some way, and so that could also be a factor. So, I say that, not having done all the research myself, but scrolling through the thread, I'm not seeing many people arguing with that notion. That could be it, too. Like, it could be that, all the DLC they did was working with as many resources on disk as they could. Like, obviously the Dinobots and the Insecticons.
Yeah.
And, it's one thing to alter those characters to work in multiplayer. It's another to just build a new one from scratch.
Yeah. In the end, it doesn't matter, because if it's not happening, it's not happening. So there's no point in spending hours upon hours debating why. It's just, if they're not doing it, they're not going to do it. So
yeah. Have you been on the internet before?
That's why I said that. I'm hoping someone
just
will see it from my point
no
of view.
Because there's no reason to spend hours and hours debating something doesn't mean it's not going to get debated for hours and hours.
Well, a great point to extrapolate from this as an ender is that the news story highlights two other game franchises that have had years of support, that being, Halo games or Left 4 Dead. And it's almost like that's almost the perfect example. Fall of Cybertron is no Halo and it's no Left 4 Dead. No matter how much I enjoy the game, and financially, it's not those games.
Well, and even besides being financially, the Halo was what Bungie did. Like, that was all that they did for a really long time. Mm-hmm. So, yeah, they kept supporting those things, or that thing, because they weren't doing anything else in between titles, except for support the one that was already out. And Left 4 Dead, that's Valve, and they don't operate like anybody else.
Mm-hmm.
Like, yeah, Valve's going to do whatever Valve wants to do.
Right. But on the other hand, all of Valve's games are in the same engine. So it's not a huge stretch. We're taking the same engine and making it do something slightly different.
Yeah, Valve isn't answering to a bigger publisher the way High Moon is with Activision.
Mm.
Yep.
If they were, Half-Life 3 would have happened already.
Shh.
Huh?
They'd probably be on Half-Life 5 or 6 by now, and everyone would be sick of it.
I still can't believe how long it's been. I didn't notice until I got Freeman, and then...
It would be an annualized series the way Halo's becoming.
Half-Life Black Ops.
There was Half-Life Black Ops. It was called Opposing Force.
Oh, those were Black Ops. Yeah, you're right. Oh, no.
Yeah.
Were you Black Ops, or was it the Black Ops, were they the ninjas that you had to fight?
Well,
assassins?
They were different levels. I mean, spoiler if you haven't played Half-Life 1
spoiler
from 1996 or whatever, but, and yeah, 1998, some, one of those years. But, yeah, basically, like, crap goes down at Black Mesa. Rainer, Trent. If you're still planning on playing Half-Life 2 or Half-Life 1, which I know you were, skip ahead about 30 seconds because I'm going to give a quick rundown on some stuff you don't need to hear. So, okay, you have time. So, basically, like, crap goes down at the laboratory. You're trying to make the emergency call to the military so they can come in and start killing aliens and help you get out. What a twist. The Marines show up and they start murdering scientists in the hallways because they know too much and they don't know, for whatever reason. So, and then eventually super secret Black Ops comes in where it's like invisible ninjas and stuff where it's even more crazy. But yeah. There was a expansion pack called Opposing Force where you actually play as one of those Marines. So that's the closest it'll ever come to Half-Life Black Ops probably, but
mm-hmm. And that's why there's no more DLC for Fall of Cybertron.
Yes.
So anyway, sad topic, but it's worth bringing up, and don't be too mad. I doubt any of the High Moon guys are rubbing their hands going like, man, it's so great how we don't have to add more Transformers work to our workload. Anyway, I have some fresh, hot off the presses, steaming, you know, they smell real good, listener voicemails. Now, I don't have a way of piping a listener voicemail in software-wise to our call, so I'm going to do this the old-fashioned way, which is that I'm going to unplug my headphones, and I'm just going to play it and point my microphone at the speakers of my MacBook.
And if it sounds really bad, I'm just going to edit it in afterwards.
Yep. So get ready for some old school, ladies and gentlemen. Headphones are coming out. Okay, here we go. Voicemail's incoming from Gojira Prime.
Hey, guys, it's Gojira Prime from the boards, and I'm calling with, like, an actual listener question this time. I was just thinking about a lot of things, and one of the things that came to mind was how I started listening to your podcast in the first place. I remember what drew me to it was the fact that at the time, I just got into a lot of online fandom, and I was listening to a lot of TF Wire, and your guys' podcast was such a refreshing break from the cynicism of not only that show, but just the online fandom at large. And I was wondering if you guys think that any of that has alleviated since then, or just, you know, your general thoughts on the general online cynicism of the fandom online. I'm being really redundant, and I'm sorry for that, but I didn't rehearse this at all, obviously. But, yeah, thanks for answering, or at least listening, if you choose to ignore this. Keep the great work, and also, as I sit here looking at this Shinken Red on my desk, I must say, Vandalus, you rotten, dirty bastard.
That was a good click. Let me plug my headphones back in here. Headphones back in. Again, there should be no actual loss of time in there, but I guess we'll see. Thank you for the voicemail, Gojira Prime. Definitely, when we started doing WTF at TFW, we definitely wanted to have a Transformers podcast that you could listen to, and you could listen to it without scowling about, yeah, everything sucks, man. Like that, in the late aughts, I personally felt that being a cynical pessimist was way too fashionable online. So I'd rather try to create and take part in something that was oriented on laughter and having fun. Even if, you know, something is not enjoyed, at least it can be made fun of in a way where people are smiling and not scowling and going like, "Yes, this is stupid. And that's why the whole fandom is dying." As for alleviating over the years, I definitely feel that our starting the podcast right in the shadow of the first live-action movie and preceding it through the second and third live-action movies definitely has altered the tone somewhat, as we've all been subject to the shifts in the online fandom as it goes. But personally, I think that we came out at the other end for the better. Like, I don't think that we've really lost ourselves in utter cynicism. All we really do, as far as I can tell, is kind of make fun of people who are that cynical and also make fun of the Prime Forum because it's a really easy target. I think that going forward, it's still my personal goal to make this podcast, at least my part of it, be something where it's making people smile more so than it's making people scowl and go like, yeah, everything does suck. So, we might have a slightly different approach now, maybe a slightly more cynical approach to our positivity, but I still prefer something that offers all viewpoints with a smile rather than all viewpoints with blood and gnashing of teeth. Seth, what about you? How do you feel about the notion of like where we started and where we are in regards to the kind of purveying cynicism that is being a nerd online in discussions?
Well, how I've acted on the show has never been a conscious decision on my part. Like, from the beginning, I never sat down and thought, like, I'm not going to be like this. I'm going to be like this. And I'm just being myself. I think, and this doesn't apply to everybody, but I think there's a certain pattern that a lot of fans go through where when everything's awesome and new, then you think everything is awesome. And then you're around long enough to where you start, you know, seeing the flaws and seeing things repeat, and then maybe you get a little down and cynical on stuff, and And then you join that crew for a while, and then, like, I think we've all been around long enough. Well, especially, like, Vangelis, myself, Aaron, who have been in TFW for an extremely long time. And, you know, Dog Dog and Omegas have been around a long time, too. But we've been around longer.
Ba-bum.
And then I haven't even been around as long as Vangelis and Aaron. So, I think there's a point where if you survive through the deep cynicism phase, then you come out the other end with a more wise understanding view of things where you can, you know, not like something, but understand why somebody else would, sort of a thing. And I think that's where we pretty much operate for the most part. Like, well, we could see something we don't like, but we don't decry the whole freaking property. It's like, oh, everything's dead now because they did this one thing I didn't like. Like, this guy was the wrong shade of blue and now everything's awful.
Selling my collection.
Yeah, and then somebody else goes, I like that shade of blue. I think it's cool that they did it different. And then everyone starts fist fighting. I think we're, the lot of us are in that group where we go, well, maybe I don't care for the color, but, you know, whatever, it's okay. Like, I can identify this other aspect of it that I do like, or it's cool that they think it's cool, but I don't, or I do like this thing, but if you don't, okay, I'm not going to flip out. I'm not going to tell you you're wrong about it. It's just so, and that whole attitude of fight everything as though it's the last battle you'll ever face is, it's so every corner of the internet and dripping out into every corner of friggin' real life these days. Like,
I am Tom Cruise, the Last Samurai.
Yeah, but it's like, you can't even mention politics or religion without people just going bananas. Like, not just online, but offline. And it's, everyone in every regard needs to chill and just be a little more rational about things.
Especially when they are things that are not as important as politics and religion. People need to double chill. Like music. That's always been my big sticking thing.
Yeah, and toys. And yeah. Yeah, it's just, I would hope that listening to this show has gotten some people to kind of go a little more gray zone on this stuff and not so harsh black and white on every single thing. I mean, you just peruse the forums a bit and you see that definitely the majority seems to be at war over everything all the time. So we can't be having too much of an effect, but you know, it'd be nice if just a couple of people were more mellow and thoughtful about their opinions and how they communicate than, if we could just change one life, then it was all been worth it.
To make a difference. Gog, how about you? Like, you know, coming from the, you're not really any, like, pretty much at this point, anyone from 05, 06 onwards is the same era of participation online fandom type of thing. But, like, I know that you had some very specific viewpoints when we started the podcast about the way of presenting a positive or negative opinion in a way that didn't kind of grate on the listener.
Yeah. And I think a lot of that came out too. And on the final episode of Primetime we did for season two, where I shared some of those thoughts, and that's kind of exactly how I feel as well. Before I had even considered being part of a TFW podcast, I was a huge proponent for getting one started just because I felt like there could be a better job than what was out there at the time. I really enjoyed listening to certain podcasts, and my enjoyment of some certain podcasts fell through the floor because every week it literally felt like these people were being held at gunpoint, forced to say something. And the only things coming out of some of their mouths were, wow, this sucks. Everything sucks. I don't even know why I'm here. And after several weeks of that, it's like, I don't even know why I'm listening. And
yeah, friggin' Canadian slag.
Yeah. So, you know, it's, and like, so for, absolutely, like I have, I feel like if you are going to host a podcast about a subject that people are going to listen to for entertainment, the people that host that show should at the very least be enthusiastic or excited about it. Now, in no way, shape, or form should you manufacture that enthusiasm. But if you get to a point in your life where you're no longer enthusiastic about it, then that's the point where you have to step back and say, I probably shouldn't be doing a show about something that I don't like anymore. I hit that with Transformers Prime. I really did not enjoy a lot of the stuff about season two. And I felt myself, I was getting to the point to where I was saying the exact same thing every week where, wow, I wish they had done this, they didn't. I wish they had done this, they didn't. I really didn't enjoy this. I have no idea why they did that. This could have been better. And if you're saying the same thing every week, like, wow, this kind of sucks, and it's the same thing every week, every week, every week, people don't want to listen to that. And it's not that I feel like those points are not valid, but I feel like I've made that point. And it's not, no one is going to get any type of enjoyment from listening to me saying the exact same thing over and over. So as it stands right now, I've decided to step back and not participate in that anymore, because if I don't, I'm going to be a hypocrite, because that's my viewpoint. And that's what I feel like anything I should do. If I feel like myself or any one of us recording this hit a point to where we're literally like, wow, like this brand sucks, Hasbro sucks, there's nothing here, you know, oh, like this sucks, that sucks, that sucks, it's time for you to put your, to probably put your hat down, you know, and just say like, there's, it's not that those opinions are not valid, but why would you host a show about something that you don't like? Now, there's certainly things about the brand that I've become kind of cynical or don't really enjoy all that much. I'm kind of burned out on the movie stuff. We've tried to make it as fun as we can, but it's a reality of the brand and it's not going away. And even when you think it's going away, it comes back and shows you that it's not going away. And I'm kind of cynical about cynicism, like, and like what Evangelist mentioned before, there was a different era of the online community from like 04, 05, 06, which, and earlier than that for sure. But that was when I got back into the brand, was in 2004. And I wasn't necessarily involved in the discussion on the forums for that long, but I definitely lurked. I was getting back into the brand. I was buying stuff and, you know, reading the sites, and it was just, and reading the threads, and, you know, it was a very small, tight-knit community, and it definitely has changed some with the movies. And in my opinion, certainly for the worse in some ways, and in, and for the better in some, you know, I mean, those movies brought in millions upon millions of dollars into the brand and has given us stuff that we would have never gotten otherwise. On the other hand, it's put this as well as I can,
it's,
but
a it's lot, up to the volume,
right? But a lot. Yeah. And it's not, it's no longer a small tight knit community where everybody knows everybody like it used to be. It's no one knows anyone anymore. And so it's very impersonal, I think, compared to how it was. And it's also just overly, really kind of negative and combative in a lot of cases. And there's still some people, I mean, that I meet in the community all the time that are great. And like, I don't regret it at all. I think things have changed. I try to get through. I mean, like, even with the current toy stuff, like, I loved Generations when it came out a couple years ago. And so when we heard Generations was coming back, and I was super excited of getting the figures in hand, I was really kind of dissatisfied with how things have gone with the Generation stuff in general, and even the Prime stuff. Like, there's not a lot at retail right now that I consider terrific. It's, you know, every once in a while there's a gem or something that I can enjoy, but for the most part, it's been a while. I mean, especially coming off the Dark of the Moon line and going right into Prime and, you know, Generations 2.0, it's been many, many, many months of stuff that I'm mostly completely uninterested in. But I still love the brand. Like, I love robots. Like, it is an absolute passion of mine. So this has given me an opportunity to go back and get stuff that I haven't had before, like the older Beast figures and stuff that I've been eyeballing for years or missed, going back and getting recommendations for older figures, and I've still, regardless of the fact that I'm knee deep in crap right now that I really don't like, and I have no problem saying that I don't like it, but there's plenty out there I think to find that I do like, and I mean that's given me opportunity to get some absolutely just amazing figures that have been out for years that I just never had a chance to get, like Big Convoy and Arcadis and Long Rack and, you know, stuff like that, going back and even getting the occasional older G1 figure here and there, which, and I'm still certainly, you know, up for doing that, and I try to keep my eyes out for stuff that I missed, but I think even when you for a franchise that's been going on for 30 years almost, it's so broad that even if you find yourself in a period of a year or two where you're not necessarily satisfied with how it is, you don't have to fall victim to the miasma of just utter negativity and that sort of thing and just breathe it in and out of your lungs and just become disgusted with the brand. It's like, yeah, like there is things to not be excited about, but there's so much more out there than this snapshot of what's going on right now. I mean, aside from the insane, and I mean that in a positive way, but those insane people that literally already own everything, that there's nothing to get. I feel bad for those people because when there is a lull of stuff that's not great, you have nothing. Unless you go into your giant toy room and look at the literal hundreds of toys that you have that you forgot that you bought. That would be kind of cool. You basically have a museum in your basement or somewhere. That would be awesome. But that's what I do when I find myself in periods of when I'm kind of sick of the status quo or there's nothing to get or you're just at the beginning of a movie line that you have mostly no interest in. There's, at least from my point of view, there is tons out there to still love about the brand, and you just sometimes you have to take a step back and not look what's on retail stores. And
I think you've also got the advantage of having come in on the tail end of the Unicron trilogy. You didn't go through the period a lot of folks went through in the early 2000s of there really is almost nothing new, so we're all buying everything that's been coming out. Right. In late Beast Wars, and so that's why I've loved the notion of discovery you've been having over some of those toys, because a lot of us went through that pre Armada and even during Armada.
Yeah, I came in during Energon. I remember when I first started getting back into Transformers, looking on the shelves and seeing Energon. I'm like, what is this crap? This isn't my beloved G1. And I started buying up G1 reissues, Takara, both Takara and commemorative series from Hasbro, and Alternators. I love the Alternators. I'm like, this is awesome. Like, this is what's meant for me. I'm an adult. They're making Transformers for adults. That's cool. And I loved them.
Oh, I remember when we got that first picture of the first Alternator.
Smokescreen.
I was in a really down place. Like, there was just nothing out I cared about. I didn't care about the show. Wasn't reading the comics. I was borderline leaving the fandom. And then that first picture of Smokescreen was on the front page of TFW. And I got like that wave of excitement. I was like, it's so badass. Like, yeah. Look at this thing. It's unbelievable. I'm back in.
Yeah.
And for some of us, like, we're kind of in a similar state currently, and eventually something's going to come out where we're all going to go like, oh my god, it's so badass.
Yeah. And also I want to say one thing that I feel like, you know, Primetime being a great example of this is, even when, you know, one or two hosts get kind of downtrodden on a given piece of discussion material, I find we're often able to at least turn that into an interesting back and forth of, you know, an uncombative discussion between someone who doesn't like something versus someone who does like it, and pulling out of there some interesting points. I was kind of happy that some of the listeners said in the Primetime thread that they liked the discourse between the slightly more positive viewpoint and the growingly negative viewpoint. And I was like, yeah, that's one of the things I think we really pulled out thing. But the key point of it, though, is that if one side of that discussion is not having as much fun as the other side of the discussion, that is a predication to stop taking part. Because if it's actually legit not all that fun to have to, for it to become this job to do every week, then, you know, that's when someone does need to pull out, because eventually that will break down the existing constructive thing that is coming out of it, because eventually someone just gets sick of it and they're like, I don't want to be here.
That's absolutely true. And I want to say too, like, that meant a lot to me. Like, the people saying that, like, it's sad to see you not take part, because I really enjoy, even when you're not interested in what, or you don't enjoy what you're talking about, that you still make your points well without resorting to the, oh, it sucks or whatever. And like, yeah, like that meant a lot to me. I'm like, then I feel like all the discussion we've had has been worthwhile. But I also feel like if I continue to have to do that every week, my ability to do that is going to wane and wane to the point to where I'm not able to do that anymore.
Yeah, the nice thing is, it never came to the point where I'd think something and Gog would think something, and it came to the point of, yeah, well, up yours. Like, that was the nice thing. Like, we were able to go like, oh, I like that. Oh, I didn't. Like, okay, well, let's take our Venn diagrams and see what crosses over and what doesn't, and let's make something interesting out of it.
Yeah.
And that's how to not be incessantly positive and still create something that, you know, as I said at the beginning, someone can listen to and grin about, because it's not attacking them. It's creating something constructive out of a disagreement.
Right.
And disagreements, even, like, that's already, like, that's almost putting the incorrect light. It's not like one of us were like, no, you're wrong. It was fantastic when, insert thing. Also, man, guys, I haven't been that positive on Prime, have I? I mean, I've been making fun of half the things happening in the show of late. Anyway, it's an interesting topic, though. Thank you for the voicemail, Gojira Prime. And, I mean, definitely, it's one of those perspectives that's worth taking a look back upon, because that was one of our behind-the-scenes guiding marks when we started this thing, was we are not going to become an engine of hatred that only serves to fuel people who already are upset about everything. And, you know, I would so far take it that we have not become that in what I have seen of feedback so far. Especially given the amount of...
I'm going to start a spinoff show and call it Hate Engine.
Hate Engine? Yeah. Go for it. I mean, we have gotten feedback that said, like, you all are way too positive. So, you know, I always wonder if there's, like, some kind of inverse of this, where it's, like, we become, like, the bizarro hate engine, like the love heroine.
Shattered glass hate engine.
The shattered glass hate engine. I don't even know what that would be. Anyway, thank you for the voicemail, Gojira Prime. We've also got a written listener question from Wingnut. Who says, greetings, WTFers. I was listening to the Tron Legacy soundtrack and found myself thinking this would be great music for Transformers. I kind of had the same thought when I was watching that movie. Have you heard music that you thought would make good Transformers music that wasn't written for that purpose? Wingnut, in Tilda's Click. I have totally heard music that I think would work for Transformers. Easy examples on my end. Any industrial, any electro-metal, and even just the soundtrack from Dread 3D would have been great. Transformers music, in my opinion. Machine music works great for machines, and I think that that's a huge opportunity that was given, that there were three live-action films so far to try that out, and that they instead, you know, no disrespect to Steve Jablonski, but, you know, the dude does a job more so than, you know, he does, I think, get right into the project. He does a good job, you know, no disrespect meant there, but I feel like, you know, three movies in, surely there could have been some point in there to at least do a track of more industrial-oriented music, because electronic, electro, heavy, industrial, metal, whatever in that whole range, that is the kind of music that it sounds like how the live-action Transformers look, and I'm so surprised it never got connected together in some way. Seth, what about you? What's some Transformers music that wasn't Transformers music that you've heard?
I've never thought along those lines. Like, I can't think of anything where I've been listening to it and thought, oh, this is work for Transformers. Like, I can't think of a single time that thought crossed my mind.
Rock Lobster.
Yeah. Try that. but, like, kind of thinking about that topic, I mean, I could see... I don't think it would work for a live-action movie. Like, maybe it'd be more appropriate for an animated series, but... Like, the kind of music that Miyoto Musica does, who are former Devo members. Like, they did the music for Rugrats. They've done scores for movies. They do music for TV commercials. But I could see they're more synth-oriented style maybe working for an animated series. But yeah, like, I can't think of any specific band or song that I would apply. It's just not the way I think about music. Hey, let's fight about music.
Oh, here we go.
Your band sucks. My band is awesomer.
That's not music. Okay, small aside. If there ever was something that just nullifies the entire purpose of discussion between parties that do not entirely agree on anything, that's not music is one of the stupidest statements you could ever make, unless you're just trying to end the conversation, you know, in a no rewind kind of way, because that's not music is, I hate that phrase. It's such a, anyway.
A phrase that I can't stand that people say in regards to music is, I listen to everything. No, you don't. No, you don't. There is some form of music you don't like.
Mm-hmm.
Just think about it for a second and say, I like these kinds of music, but I'm not really into these kinds of music.
And that
nobody likes everything.
That form of music you don't like, it's still music. I'm sorry. Gog, have you ever heard music that you feel could have fit Transformers? Not necessarily like live action, but just like Transformers background kind of music.
No, like, surprisingly, I actually kind of feel exactly the same way Seth does. Like, I've never identified a specific type of music as, like, that sounds like Transformers. Like, with Tron, like, certainly it's like, you know, that sounds like Tron music to me. Or, we've had the conversations before about, like, Mass Effect and stuff like that. And I certainly feel like there are some series that invoke, like, a certain style or something. But I've never... You know, I've never actually felt that way about Transformers. Like, I kind of dug the Prime soundtrack. I thought it was good. It was maybe a little repetitive at times, but there were some legitimately good pieces in there that I felt like had its own style. But I felt like that was more Transformers Prime style, maybe not necessarily Transformers in general. I mean, certainly I could hear, like, some of the old G1 music. Like, I felt like that had its own kind of unique style to it at the time that was definitely a product of the 80s or so, but no, like, personally I haven't. Like, it would have to be maybe related to a specific piece of the franchise to me, and even then I've never really identified music as sounding like as sounding Transformers-y or not. And I've never really had any real desire to, I guess. I mean, I'm right there with you. I think the Tron Legacy soundtrack is great. Like, it is a great soundtrack. I think Daft Punk, are musically terrific. I enjoy them quite a bit, but I'm that's not to say that their style of music could not work for Transformers. I think it would be great. And I agree with what Vangelis was saying about, there, it might have, by being a bit of a wasted opportunity, just given Transformers just a regular score. And I agree again with what he said about Steve Jablonski. The dude makes good music. Like, he's a professional in every way. But much like Vangelis said, like, he's not. I doubt he's invested in the Transformers brand. Like, he's not a Transformers fan trying to make Transformers music. I don't think that he had as much of a involvement making that soundtrack sound like something that would fit the movie as much as Daft Punk did making Tron, because they are, they were making a world that existed like in the electronic realm. Software programs depicted as humanoid individuals, you know, roads being the media, cables and circuit boards and stuff. And, you know, I think they went in with a very specific, let's try to emulate that in our music. And I really don't feel like that's something Steve Jablonski did. He was making a music score. He made the theme for the Transformers movie franchise, and then the variations and scenes that sprouted out from that. And certainly it could have gone, and I think maybe in a direction that maybe would have been a little more thoughtful for the source material, and it might have worked or it might not have worked. I don't know.
I just found it like it just. I mean, it's in part my taste for sure, but I just felt like a franchise based on alien machine organisms. It's like organic machinery music is stuff that exists now. It's existed for years. It's like that's. It just seems like such a natural fit. I'm always surprised that it's. As far as I can recall, it never really happened to any degree in mainstream Transformers media. Not to say it won't ever happen. I just always sit there going, like, man, I wonder if this will be the time that they just click and just get, like, a loud, heavy warehouse percussive behind this enormous behemoth robot made of six other robots. Like, it's to me, stunningly obvious, but I don't know. And with Daft Punk, like, I think it was very reactionary to the Jablonsky score when I was sitting there listening to that, just going like, there's a dull, thudding, awesome beat to this. This feels like electro music. And then the dots I connect in my head is that stuff like that, like very processed, very artificial music, to me just fits perfectly with a fully artificial life form that is a Cybertronian in the fiction. I'm just like, man, it's so close together, but it's never happened.
And you were far from the only person that felt that way. I remember when Tron Legacy came out, there were tons of threads of people saying, like, can we get Daft Punk to do a Transformers soundtrack for the movie? Because that was awesome. Like, it was a very common opinion.
Yeah. It's thematically, they are so right next to each other. You know, it feels like it would, even just for, you know, giving it a try for one thing, even a fan piece, giving that a try. And that's the thing, a lot of fan pieces I find, you know, they'll just turn to more traditional, quote unquote traditional, metal or rock music, which is it's fine. I mean, the roots of Transformers music is the 80s Transformers movie soundtrack to many degrees, and that was loads of hair metal and synth music. And, you know, so the hair metal side of it I find like comes out more often than the synth music side with folks' interpretations, and it makes total sense, and it often works, but I would just love to hear the industrial electro Transformers soundtrack that I always feel that the franchise could totally rock. Anyway, thanks for your question, Wingnut. I believe I'm going to be mentioning Wingnut again in this podcast. I am. We're going to take a quick intermission, though, and then we'll be back with some What We Got This Week. And during What We Got This Week will be that aforementioned mention. What will it be about? Who knows? We'll find out in a bit. Talk to you soon.
Chicken pot, chicken pot, chicken pot pie.
It's time to talk about money spending. What We Got This Week, ladies and gentlemen, begins now with On Topic. We're going to talk about Transformers we bought, and I am turning to you, Mr. Gogdog, to tell me about Transformers you bought since we last spoke.
Well, bought or received some way, because I got some stuff.
Oh,
I didn't necessarily buy all of it.
Yeah, okay, so we're lined up. It's I know what you're talking about. I've been there.
You've been there. Oh, that's like, okay, so
he's crazy, but I love him.
Yeah, I don't know how to approach this. I want to make sure that I do it justice. I want to make sure that I do it in a specific. I want to achieve certain goals while I do this. Goals that I'm not willing to state. So let me think. But a young man by the name of Ryder Pathos, who listens to the show, sent me a message and basically said that he wanted to do something nice for me and wanted my address, and I don't want to embarrass him. I don't want to embarrass anybody else, but I will just say that, he sent me some stuff in the mail, and, he is a very kind and selfless person. It almost feels awkward for me because, like, it feels really weird when someone says, hey, like, you don't necessarily know me, but I feel like I know you because I've been listening to the show for a while, and I feel the need to give you something. And it's really weird, like, because I'm just a dude who likes toys, and I like talking about toys and the fiction and the brand and stuff. And, you know, in no way, shape, or form do I feel like I deserve anything from anybody, you know, for doing this. So it's very humbling when someone feels the need that they want to they feel that the desire to pay some of that back or whatever. So yeah, it's really weird. It's not that it hasn't happened before, but just never really on this level, I guess. Yes, it's very humbling. And I still don't really know how I feel about it, because I don't feel like I deserve anything from anybody. I'm not working for a charity and going out there and spending hours of my time selflessly, like, trying to make the world a better place. Like, nothing like that. Like, I'm just talking about something that I like talking about. So, like, in no way do I feel worthy of anything from anybody. But at the same time,
Rite of Pathos is also, he is a pro bro. He is a bro among bros. He's been that way for a while. He used to run some really amazing giveaways on toy back in 09 or 2010. I forgot the year now, but it was almost a monthly thing of him just going like, "Hey, I got this thing. I want to give it away. Let's figure this out."
Yeah.
Like, this is his nature. And the best part is, you know, he's on Twitter. You can talk to him quite easily. Dear listener, he's a very normal person who likes stuff and dislikes stuff and is civil about it.
Yeah.
It was funny because I didn't want to intervene very much, but I kind of almost want to go like, "Don't worry about it. It's not going to be a bomb."
Yeah. Well, at the same time, it's very easy. I think selflessness and the desire to want to give is an incredibly admirable trait. And it's really easy at the same time. Like, I feel like people shouldn't interrupt it when it happens too. But when you find, I think everybody has known something where they're in the position to where somebody received something and they don't really feel like they necessarily deserve it. If everyone told the other person that, "Oh, I can't accept this, I don't deserve it," then there would be no such thing as giving. And so it's kind of this weird, awkward position to where it's like, I feel like I should, like, refuse. But on the other hand, if someone feels so strongly about wanting to give something and you literally tell them no, they can't, you've just robbed someone the opportunity to do something nice. But you're the one making the decision, and it's kind of a conflict of interest because you're the one on the receiving end. So I don't know. Like, I don't want to get too philosophical about this, but I just, like, thank you, Rite of Pathos. Like, I think what you did was very kind. I feel completely unworthy of it, but, you know, it's, If you feel that strongly about it, then I'm humbled and I really appreciate it. But one of the things I technically did buy from him, he offered me a Masterpiece Thundercracker for really cheap. So I'm not – I don't know what happened there. But I did get myself a Masterpiece Thundercracker. This is the third Masterpiece figure I've gotten in 2 weeks. So, which is I think that's a new personal record there, but,
only in 2012.
Yes. So, Masterpiece Thundercracker, this is my first time with the hands-on of that new MP11 mold, because I still have yet to get MP11. I always figured that would be around for a while, and it disappeared a lot faster than I expected it to. So, hopefully that they do another run of that eventually, or I can just find a good deal on it, because the aftermarket prices on that thing are kind of ridiculous. But I still want it, definitely. But this mold really took me aback, because it's a mold that I've owned how many of the original version of. Like, I had green Starscream, I had Hasbro G1 colored Starscream. I had Ghost Starscream. I had Walmart Skywarp. So I've owned this mold 4 times over already. So getting it and with the retooled parts, it's more than just aesthetic differences. Like, you actually have to transform things in a very specific order this time that the older version wasn't restrained to. So it was really strange to me of holding something in your hands that is so familiar. It's like you feel like you could do this with your eyes, you know, with your eyes blindfolded, and then you realize like, oh wait, that's, I just did something wrong and now I can't do this. Like, oh. So I really like the changes that were made. I think overall, it's really great. The improvement on the feet with the new feet, the addition of the heel, is terrific. And what was really interesting for me too, was because I think I don't have the mold with me. They're all still in storage from when I moved the original one, but cause on the old, G1, or the old Masterpiece Starscream mold, like you could flip up the little panels above the jet engines and they were just like detailed engine parts there that didn't do anything, right? Like the little panels, but right behind the jet exhaust. You know what I'm talking about?
I haven't messed with the toy for a while, so I haven't gone nearby. Okay.
Well, basically, it still works exactly the same, except for those little detailed parts right above the engines, like flip out and become heel. So I thought that was kind of awesome how it's still, because at first I'm like, oh wait, there was a different gimmick here. So now they've added a transforming part in, but then you open up the panels and it's still the exact same gimmick in jet mode. It just does something different in robot mode. So I like that. The only thing that's really weird to me was the way that the, and I appreciate what they did. They do you have this mold at all, Evangelist? The new one, the new Masterpiece?
No, I haven't. I've seen Thundercracker here in Upstate a few times, but the Toys R Us price kind of sucks.
Yeah.
So I haven't picked up either of the Japanese versions yet. So I'm still kind of unaware of some of. I know some of the differences from description, but not on hand.
Right. So they justify the blasters because like with the Seekers, like the Null Rays or whatever they're called for Thundercracker, because I think technically his aren't Null Rays, but the blasters are on the wings in jet mode, but they're on the arms in robot mode, right? And that's the way it's always been with the Seekers ever since G1. So technically, like that part, even in the toys that perfectly transform, it's a bit of parts forming, which I think for weapons has always been fine. It's not like anybody cared. But for some reason, Takara decided that they wanted to justify that and make it legit perfect transformation. So the arms, the blasters on the arms are still in the same spot, but they have this swing arm that collapses inside of the blasters so that when you transform them to jet mode, they flip out, they're attached to a ball joint on the upper arm, but then they're attached to these arms, which then technically like push them up and then you can peg them into the wing, but they're still attached on the swing arm to where the robot arms would be. So it's actually a perfect transformation where even the Null Rays on the arms are perfectly transforming. So like it was just, it's this weird, it was like somebody really had OCD with this. It's like, it's not technically a perfect transformation if you have to move them, I guess. So I don't know, but it's neat how they did that. But on the other hand, it makes it a little strange though, if you want to attach the missiles, because then you're having to kind of pop the ball joint out. And then it has like a ball joint, empty ball socket, like on the arms just to put the missiles on there. So, but I never really cared too much about the missiles anyway, because technically, you know, the G1 Seekers always had the blasters under the wings instead of the missiles, but it still comes with those missiles anyway. I really like the proportions on the new head. That was really my main complaint about the original Starscream head is I liked it. I like the face swapping gimmick. I like the expression, but the face always seemed way too narrow to me. It never really evoked G1 Starscream at all. And I think the new head on the on Thundercracker is definitely a true representation. And one way that they did that was they made the head wider. And now I understand why they didn't do that on the original one, because the head literally doesn't fit. They made the vents, because on the Seekers, like, one of the trademark aspects of that G1 Seeker head is it has the vents on either side. Those vents actually spring collapse into the head when you transform it to allow it to fit into the same hole that the original MP Seeker head did. So now I kind of understand why the head always looks squished, because they literally had to keep it narrow in order to fit in that gap. It just never really hit me before until I realized what a better head looked like and what it would have to do in order to fit into that same spot. But no, overall, I'm really happy about the mold. I think most of the changes were really positive. I don't understand some of the graphics that they printed on it. In jet mode, he has like reflector tampographed onto either side of the jet. I'm sure if I did a little bit of research, there's a reason for it. But I don't really get that. And then there's like names of I think of some of the Hasbro designers tampoed on as like the pilot and the co-pilot of the jet, which that kind of seems strange for me too, because unless those guys actually had like input into the design of it or the retool, which they very might have, and if they did, I think that's neat. Otherwise, it seems a little weird that a jet that was mostly designed by Takara and then retooled by them, and then for the Hasbro designers to kind of stick their names on after the fact when they didn't actually design it, seems a little strange. So I don't know one way or the other, but so I don't know. But either way, it's like I think a little bit of the graphics on there are a little like okay. Other than that, though, he's an absolutely terrific figure, and I think that the new retooled Seeker mold is very superior to the original, and that Seeker mold was one of my favorites. Like, I've always listed the Hasbro Starscream as one of my favorite Transformer figures of all time, and I certainly feel like this is an improvement on it. So I look forward to the day when I find a Starscream that I can afford and for a price that I'm willing to pay.
Mm-hmm.
So thank you, Ryder Pathos, for that. Also in that box that he sent me was something that I'm going to talk about in the off-topic, but there were a couple other on-topic things in there. He sent me another Prid-Viacon, so now I now have four Prid-Viacons, not counting the Jet Viacon and the two first editions I have and the Cyberverses, the three Cyberverses. So I thought I was going to stop at three, and that didn't happen. So, and man, I went to Target like 2 or 3 days ago, and they literally had 1, 2, 3, 4, 5 Viacons all on the pegs, and all the Transformers figures are on sale because we're starting to get in the holiday season. So they were like $3 off of retail, and like Viacons, at least a couple of Targets that I've been to lately have started to become the new Bumblebee, where the pegs are full of Viacons, and I'm like, this is the day that I've been wanting to live in for many, many months.
That's how it should be.
Exactly. That is absolutely how it should be. So, but it makes me happy. Now Viacons are everywhere. I just in the last month, I think I've seen them at 7 or 8 different retail stores, and I have passed on all of them after I got my third. And it feels very good to be able to live in a world where I can pass on Viacons. And so but I'm also glad that the people who have been struggling for months to find one are now really going to, I mean, it's probably going to depend on your local area, but you are, at the very least, you could probably find someone online to pick you up one at cost. It's good. I'm glad that those things are finally starting to become saturated and not scalper bait anymore. So yes, thanks again, Mr. Pathos. He also sent me a GDO Scout Sandstorm and a GDO Legends Thundercracker. I didn't realize about the Thundercracker either that he came with, because a lot of the GDO stuff has little retools and stuff to go with it. Like we talked about the Motor Breath, he came with a little sword that the original Optimus Prime didn't have. And the Thundercracker, I didn't realize it, he actually comes with little G1 style, the same blasters I was talking about, like the little Noel Ray looking blasters, and they peg in great in under the wings in jet mode. But the mold, the funny thing about this is the mold already has little panels that flip out and look like the Noel Rays in robot mode. So he's forced to hold the null rays in his hands like pistols. So the GDO Thundercracker is literally like, he's like quadruple wielding null rays. It's kind of hilarious. So, but it's neat, I guess. It's funny. I don't see anywhere for them to go on the arms. He just has to hold them. So, and then but they also have pegs on the end, so he could technically hold the null rays like clubs as well. So he could just he could have null clubs. So, I guess. and let's see. So Thundercracker, Viacon, Sandstorm, and another Thundercracker. So that is my on topic that I got from Mr. Rhydopathos. Again, thank you, sir. I am not done singing your praises quite yet. I will be in the off topic. Moving on, I got Thundertron, which I received like literally the day after we recorded the previous episode.
Whilst in the hotel, if I recall correctly.
Yep. So. this is a figure that I've been fascinated with ever since we saw, like, the preview images from this guy from Hasbro. And, like, I remember I spent, like, quite a bit of time just staring at the photos of this guy, trying to figure out how he transformed. I mean, we've talked about it on the show a few times. It's like, how does his beast feet become like the shoulders? And, I mean, since we had gotten more in-hand photos of people showing different angles of him, we eventually figured it out. And it was, of course, you know, like we all assumed, it wasn't actually magic. But, I'm really glad that we got to see the concept art for this before I got to talk about it on the show. Because it's, like, the whole process of this is really fascinating, but I really like the fact that this, and it makes more sense too, that this was basically a character design that was never necessarily intended to be a toy. It was just like, hey, draw this character, and, you know, it's a Transformer, so make it work, but it's more for fiction, like the Sideswipe, than it is actually for a toy design. But yeah, like leading up to it, like I was like, I want this guy. Like, he looks great. He looks different. It's something new in the line. It's something that I think, you know, we haven't gotten a lot of, I wouldn't say originality, but I definitely feel like the kind of off the wall Transformers things. It's always something that I'm fascinated with, whether they necessarily work out or not. But Thundertron is being so different, and, you know, like he's a pirate and a beast, and I kind of think the pirate stuff is a little over the top. Like, he's a pirate, and he's got a beard, and he's got a scimitar, and he's got a peg leg. It's like, we get it. I get it, okay? He's a freaking pirate. Like, he doesn't have to be a space pirate and be, like, an Earth swashbuckler pirate. Like, it doesn't have to go that far. But I've since warmed up to that quite a bit. I really like this guy. He's definitely not flawless, but like I said, like being able to look at the concept art of this guy side by side, like there is just so much detail. Like there is, if you compare the concept art next to and look at the toy, you are going to be hard pressed to find a detail that's in the art that is not sculpted into the toy. Like everything, there's definitely some paint apps I think that could still be applied that aren't. And even in the stock photos of the toy before it was released, like there was some silver paint on the feet and little bits here and there that didn't end up. So that would be an easy custom job, I think, for some people. But like the stripes, like I think like his kind of his aesthetic thing is like the white, the big white stripe going like around or like alongside either side of the lion head around the shoulders and kind of going around it in a circle. If you look at the part that becomes like the bottom of the lion mane or the abdomen in robot mode, like it's actually sculpted. So there's even more of that stripe that didn't make it, I think, to the paint apps. So I'm actually considering maybe, I don't think it would be very hard, but I think that you could add like even more and it would just give him even more like little character and bring out some of that sculpted detail. Cause he's got tons of it. He's got like little tribal, lines, like on his sword and like the lion head. One really interesting thing too, that, somebody had pointed out in the feedback thread a long time ago. I can't take credit for it. But I definitely want to paint it, is one of his lion ears and that you see in both modes, but like the Beast lion head actually has an earring and it's sculpted in, and you can see it in the concept art that what's his name, Emiliano.
Yeah, Emiliano.
Yeah, that he drew, and they actually sculpted that into the toy. Like, he has a little earring. So, I do think that this toy could use some more paint. And one thing I want to do, like, ever since I moved, I haven't been able to find any of my paints or paint markers or anything, or detailing markers. But once I do, I want to, I think at the very least, I want to give it just a little bit of a wash, because I think the blue on the white paint scheme is just, it's gorgeous. Like, I really like it. It's very unique. But I think some of the detail in that white is just a little lost. And I think going in there and just giving it just a slight wash to bring out some of that detail is really gonna look good. I think customizers are going to be able to do incredible things with this guy, just bringing out the sculpted detail that didn't receive paint, especially looking at the concept art and showing that, like, the original original intent for this guy was him to be kind of old and all battle damage and stuff. I think we're going to see some really incredible customs with this guy. And I'm pretty sure about 30 people got the idea in their head to do that as soon as this concept art was posted. But no, like, I'm really impressed. Like, I think, like, really my only complaint is I wish that the beast mode was just a little more poseable. You can see, like, he has, like, sculpted bits in his leg that you can tell were designed to be joints in the art. But, you know, due to toy budgetary reasons, like, there's not, like, five joints in the leg that move in reverse directions just for lion mode. So, like, you know, and I think beast... like, beast formers are always at a bit of a disadvantage anyway when it comes to stuff like that, because when you turn into a car, the only thing you have to do is have wheels that roll, and then you're good. It has to basically turn into a brick that can roll and look good at most angles, and that's about the biggest standard that people hold for car mode. Whereas with transformers that turn into animals, like, I think people tend to, especially maybe in this day and age, or maybe it's just me, but I don't think it's me looking at the reactions, but people are like, oh, it turns into a lion. Oh, the lion isn't fully articulated. Like, that's kind of disappointing. And it is disappointing, but it's also, it's like, but that's also a standard that only applies to, you know, to transformers that turn into animals. Whereas nothing else on the line, it's not a standard that they would have to meet. And I think he looks great in lion mode. It's just, you know, you're not going to get like a ready to pounce angle or anything. He just kind of has a static mode. You can do more things with the back legs to make it look like he's walking, or, you know, or something like that. And like the feet, you can pose the front feet, but because the forearm, the upper beast arms are entirely separate piece that aren't even attached to the part that the claws are on. So they don't, the upper arms don't move really at all. And there's some fan modes that don't look terrific. So it's probably not even really worth doing, but, otherwise, like, it's, I just think he's a completely unique addition to this brand that it just, like, it feels refreshing to me. Like, he's not a car or a motorcycle or a truck or, you know, an airplane. Like, he's a angry, factionless old man that wants to kill everyone, and he turns into a robotic lion. But it's a unique lion. Like, it's not like he's got these white, blue stripes going around him, and like a blue and white and gold theme. And he's just very unique. I really like him. The peg leg, is actually, like, it works well. Like, it's sculpted at an angle so that if you give him a bit of a V stance, then it sits flat. So, like, it was very well thought out. His hips, because his hips kind of extend out in beast mode, and you push them together to give him a more humanoid, natural look for his hips in robot mode. They don't really lock together all that well. It's not like they're always just falling out, but sometimes when you pose the legs, like, one of the hips will slide out, and you got to push it back in. I think it's mostly minor, but it is a bit of a small nitpick. Also, like, looking at the concept art, that was posted just yesterday or day before or whenever. His because, like, all the stock imagery just shows his lion tail just kind of hanging in the back, And so, like, that's how everybody's really left it. But looking at the concept art, it's like, oh, like, the lion tail, like, is never shown, like, anywhere in the actual robot mode. So it's not really meant to hang, apparently, in robot mode. And then I looked, and he's got, like I think I had said this before when we were talking about the concept art, but he's got, like, this little tassel thing around his hip. So you could actually bend the tail around, and it mimics, like, that part of the concept art. And it, like, it's, so I don't know if that was intended. I don't think it was, because the actual concept art, like, that thing doesn't really resemble his tail, but it works well enough, I think, in robot mode to work. The MechTech gimmick sucks, of course. It's kind of a failure. Like, it doesn't even, like, it's supposed to, like, it lights the sword up. The sword is supposed to have a quote-unquote energon glow. If you turn out the lights completely and activate the MechTech weapon, all you literally see is a bright red LED. You can't even see the sword blade. The light doesn't even shine through it, so I don't know.
Like, I've seen a lot of pictures of a quote-unquote fixed one where it's just literally a yes. translucent blue sword with the light box torn off of it.
Yep. I'm going to modify it myself. And it's interesting, too, because if you look at his arm blade, like, because his lion foot, the one that goes onto the peg leg, it comes off and attaches to his arm as a separate weapon. But if you look at the design of the arm blade in the concept art, the claws definitely look different than the beast claws, and that's emulated again with the same detail and stuff on the MechTech. The MechTech actually serves the point, or it kind of takes the place of the two weapons that are shown in the concept art, where he has the arm claw or the hand claws, and he's holding the sword. And all, like, again, like, I appreciate what they did. You could tell that love was put into this. It has the little lion head molded into the hilt. It's got every bit of the detail that's in the concept art, every single bit is molded into the sword. It's really impressive. It's just, you can't use it as a sword. It sucks. Thankfully, it's probably a fairly easy mod, and I've seen people working on it. And I can't wait to paint. I'm definitely going to paint it. Like, probably just paint the sword white, because that would work, or maybe silver. I have white spray paint. I don't know if I have any silver, but I could easily get it. And then just paint the hilt parts gold to bring out the little lion design, and find some way to just give it a bit of a hilt, something that can go into a 5mm peg hole, and he's done. Like, the sword itself will look fine. You just have to, I just want to disconnect it from the MechTech part. Find something to glue on there or something. Like, so, but whatever. But I think the sword itself, unless Dr. Wu comes along and makes a terrific one, his sword is already really accurate. You just have to take it off of the battery box and find some way to peg it into his hand, and it'll look fine. But no, I'm very, very, very happy with this toy. He's not perfect, but I think it's refreshing. I like it. I love the design. I love the color. I still haven't read the book where Thundertron appears in, but, like, it, I don't care. It doesn't affect really my love for the toy or the design of the character, but he's great. And the last thing I got that's on topic is I got my fans project Assaulter. I really like Assaulter. He's cool. I like all of his modes. His jet mode, I think, is the best. Like, it's just absolutely beautiful. It's rock solid. It's huge. Like, I transformed him into jet mode after, because I took a gallery of him on my Flickr. I left him in jet mode when I went to bed. I woke up the next morning and saw him sitting on the table, and I just said, Jesus, that guy is huge in jet mode. Like, he's he's like, I don't know. Like, jet mode is almost, it feels like almost a leader size figure.
I remember at TFCon, that was the one mode I held in hand, and I keep having to kind of call back muscle memory whenever I see pictures of him right now in hand for the people who've got him so far, because I'm like, why am I so surprised I held that already? Like, I've held that in hand. I know how big it is, but I just forgot, because it is a surprisingly large and heavy jet mode.
Yep, it is really heavy. He has tons of die casts in his legs. Only time will tell if that's detrimental or not. I like how his feet work, but they're on ball joints, and there's a lot of weight on that. So hopefully it'll hold up. I have no reason to believe it won't at this point, but, you know, who knows. But I like it. So Assaulter is Warbot 03. The first Warbot we got was Warbot Defender, which was the fans project Springer. Then we got Warbot 02, which was Steel Core, and then Assaulter. Assaulter definitely feels closer, I think, to Defender design-wise than Steelcore. Mm-hmm. But it feels like this was made by the people who made Defender with having a lot more experience under their belt. It's infinitely more intuitive, but it just feels like a better designed Defender in just the feel of the toy, I think. And I like Defender, but Defender was, unless you transformed him often, it was really easy to say, what the hell am I supposed to do next?
And Defender's poor knees.
Right. Yeah. And I love Defender. My only real problem with Defender was his lack of heels. That was a huge detriment to that figure.
And in the long run, his knee design ended up being his biggest downfall, because his knees would just eventually stop being ratchets.
I never transformed him enough, I think, to get to that point. So
yeah, it's unfortunate. And I know that they've learned a lot since then.
Yeah.
But he's this weird stark reminder of, like, this is someone's first full figure,
right?
And you can tell in both good ways and bad.
Yeah, and it feels. I mean, it definitely feels like they've learned a lot. But his robot mode is just incredibly poseable. Like, it's just full of personality. Like, I really like the guy. I like the space carrier a lot more than some people. I know a lot of people for some reason don't like that mode, and that's fine. And you know, you don't have to use it, but I like it. I think if I find some sort of stand, get one of those Japanese. I forget the name of them, but the stage, the robot stages, and get a couple of arms under there to hold him up, because he is really heavy. I don't know if a single arm would do it, but I'm very, very happy with Assaulter, and he continues to remind me of why I like Fans Project. And I have yet to buy a product from Fans Project that I've been disappointed in. And so, but no, Assaulter is he's really good. I'm trying to remember if there's anything else I wanted to say about him, but I don't think so. I think by now most people they've seen Assaulter and have an opinion on him one way or another, but I do like him. So, and I like all of his modes, but his jet mode, especially as far as the vehicle modes go, it's super clean. It's rock solid. It's beautiful. It's huge. Absolutely giant. So that is, unless anybody has any questions about Assaulter, that's all I got on topic.
I've been avoiding asking questions about Assaulter because I'm like, for some reason with Fans Project toys especially, I'm always kind of like, I kind of want to jump into them blind even when I have the opportunity to know things ahead of time.
Yeah.
Because I've been so interested in that company since they began. I'm kind of like, I just want to see what they made. And it's not like I'm going to actively avoid hearing more about it, but it's like, I don't feel like I need to ask questions because I want to wait till I have it in hand.
Right.
And then,
there is one thing I wanted to say. When I was transforming him the first time, some of his tabs, like, it was scary. Like, you have to push, and it felt like they did not fit. I eventually got them to fit, but it was very precarious, and some of them were popping out, and I was like, oh man, like, you know, am I going to have to mod this or what? I transformed a few times. Everything fits beautifully. Like, I literally had to break the toy in, but I didn't have to do anything to make that work. I transformed him literally three times, and everything fits together beautifully. It's rock solid. The tabs go in fine. They're super tight. It's the tolerances on this toy are very fascinating, because everything is just slightly too big, but it literally breaks itself into perfection. And then I'd heard afterwards that people were like literally shaving tabs down and stuff. I wouldn't do that. I mean, the people listening to this, is probably too late unless you haven't gotten yours yet, but I wouldn't transform him a good three times before you start breaking out the X-Acto knife. And not that that will good permanently damage it, but I would definitely run it through the washer a few times in that regard before you start shaving stuff down, because I had the exact same problem, and he fits just, you couldn't ask for a better fit on that stuff now. So
that's good to know, actually, because that's the one of the things I did know about him going in, is that there were folks having a lot of trouble with his tabs, and I was like, do I just sandpaper them down right away or what?
I would just go transform him through all three modes, just, you know, cycle through them about three times and see how that goes. And for me, it was literally the difference between night and day, and everything fits perfectly now, whereas when I first got him, it was scary. So, but there you go. That's my on topic.
All right. Well, my own on topic is pretty short. I got some Cyberverse toys today. I went to Toys R Us where Transformers pickings were not on sale and slim. I went by a Target and I saw some new Transformers. So I picked up some Cyberverse toys of dead guys. and these are guys who were dead within their first appearance on Prime. First up, I got the Legends Tailgate. He's a redeco of Legends Cliffjumper. I am almost going to say, I think if you were going to choose a version of this mold to get, the Tailgate version has a superior deco. It's cast in white, a lot of metallic blue plastic, and it has a flame pattern on the front that is really gorgeously rendered, especially given that it's made of four different pieces that all split apart to form his shoulders and arms. It is a bummer that he has Cliffjumper's head. If he had a different head, I'd say that, you know, he is the must-buy version. But it's a great toy. It reminds me that Legends Cliffjumper, I just don't know how that toy happened. It's so categorically superior to every other Cyberverse Legion figure on the racks right now. And also helped me come to the realization today while I was sitting on the toilet that Prime Cliffjumper has resulted in quite a few toys, all of which are pretty good for a guy who does not really make it that far in the show. And it makes me want to do like some kind of retrospective on Prime Cliffjumper and the toy ricochets he has caused and ripples down the lines he's touched. I also picked up one size class up, the Cyberverse version of Skyquake. He is the Dreadwing Cyberverse Commander, again, in Skyquake's colors. Still a pretty cool toy. And he comes with a different pair of weapons, which can be stuck together to form his underslung Gatling gun. Great figure. I'm glad that I've got the twins in one form, and I'm really looking forward to finding either of them in Voyager format at a price I want to actually pay, i.e. probably not at a convention. But he's a great figure. If you've already got Dreadwing and you actually, you know, like Dreadwing in the fiction, you should probably pick up Skyquake. But, you know, if you're just going for molds, then, you know, it's easy to just go, like, you know, skip one or the other. I think, you know, if I was going to start dissecting color choices and things, Skyquake looks a bit more interesting. Dreadwing looks a bit more interesting than Skyquake, mostly in terms of his face. I think that the one place where Dreadwing kind of falls short compared to his bro is in the color choices on his head. It's just a little bit more boring. But yeah, I'm just looking through my list one more time here. That's pretty much it for... I at the same Target, I bought a deluxe Viacon because this was the first time I saw two of them on the pegs, and I don't really need them, but I was like, I want to have bought a Viacon at retail by myself without anybody's help. I want to have done it all by myself, and I did. So now I've done that, and I feel like I've accomplished a goal for 2012. So I'm patting myself on the back and feeling pretty good about it. Anyway, that's all my on topic. Seth Buzzard, did you get any Transformers this week?
Not this week.
That's part of my clever plan, because I'm just going to roll right into the off topic with you.
Okay. I got some off topic stuff.
Mm-hmm.
I'm going to put an image in our little chatty chat.
Oh, goody.
So you guys can play along at home.
Chatty chat.
Or, well, I guess.
Chatty chat, from chatty chat, chat, chatty, chatty chat.
Okay, here it comes. Chatty, so one chat of these things I haven't spoken of anywhere because I wanted to surprise GogDog with it. And the other things I got, I have been tweeting about like crazy. Actually, there's only one person in this whole wide world that knows that I got the thing.
Taking forever for me to download. I don't know what it is yet.
Yeah, so there's 3 minutes remaining. This, man, what a cliffhanger.
Hang on.
Better stall, Seth. You got 4 minutes now.
No, hang on. I'll be able to stall because I'll see what it is, but I won't know the context, so I won't say what it is. I'll just react to it.
Well, I could talk about some of the other stuff.
Let's see. I'm going to look at this picture.
Oh, here it goes. Never mind. It's going through now. 7 seconds. It was a late bloomer.
Oh.
There we go. File. Here we go. Oh, okay.
All right.
So I didn't see that coming.
I got Persona 4 Golden for the PS Vita.
Huh.
Which actually required me to recharge my PS Vita for the first time in months.
I forgot you got a Vita.
I did too. No. No, I was fully aware that I had this thing that I never used that cost multiple hundreds of dollars. So anyway, that where I took that picture, I mean, one, it's a clever on the screen, the guy saying, man, they really went all out on this, as he's surrounded by like other stuff that I got this week. But that's exactly where I am in the game. I'm still very, very early. Like, I haven't had my first combat experience yet.
This is I don't even know what to think about this. This is Seth Buzzard playing a Japanese RPG. I can't even wrap my brain.
I used to do it all the time. And then I got sick of them.
I know.
I used to play JRPGs like crazy.
Yeah, not since you've known me. That was a long time ago.
I got sick of them. But, yeah, there are people that are very excited about this development.
Okay. I will say, because I can see that you are very early, there's lots of, as you're probably seeing, there's lots of story up front with where you don't do a whole lot, but it's not like that once you hit a certain point.
Well, I played for a while and then I watched the first of the Giant Bomb Endurance Run videos, and there was one, you know, relatively insignificant thing that I noticed was different because they were playing the original PlayStation version. And so, like, there's one bit very, very early on where in the Vita version, you have a dialogue choice, where on the original PlayStation version, it's just an internal dialogue thing. It's like, your character just thinks something that a different character asks him, and then you can choose a response to.
Yeah.
Instead of just, he thinks, oh, maybe I'm tired from my long trip. Somebody asks him. And then you, whatever. Then who knows what else is different. Apparently the opening little cinematic is different. But, you know, whatever. Yeah, but I was talking to Dashiana after I got it. And she was like, oh my God, I love that game. It's so great. And then she told me about like a 6 or 7 hour long marathon session that she had playing it. Like, started playing it and then it was 3 o'clock in the morning. And so yeah, my understanding is it's a very long game. I'll probably be chipping away at it slowly for quite some time. This week, huh?
I said I'm proud of you, Seth.
It's not that big of a deal.
I'm proud of you.
Oh, and jeepers. Buying it at GameStop. So they didn't have the display boxes out, so I wasn't even sure if they even had them in stock. So I go in there Wednesday, the day before Thanksgiving, 2 days before Black Friday, and they're already running a buy two, get one free used game deal. So I had just gone in to grab Persona, and then I was going to go, and if they didn't have it, then I was going to get it from Amazon, and I'd have it in 2 days. But I just thought, oh, I'll stop by and see if they got it. And I don't see the box, but they're running the deal. So I spent at least 20 minutes, a half hour or so, going up and down the shelves, just looking for 3 games that I wanted to get used. And hemming and hawing and, like, doing math, like, oh, this is only, like, $10 cheaper than new. And then these 2 other games I'm interested in are only $16 each. And I want to find 3 things that are basically the same price. And then I finally settle on 3 games. I take them up. One of them was the Vita version of Mortal Kombat. So I take the 3 used game boxes up. The guy grabs everything, asks if they have Persona Golden. He says they do. He rings everything up, and it was like $110. And I went, hey, that's more bucks than it's supposed to be. Because somebody had put, like, the new game box for the Vita Mortal Kombat in with all the used games. So it was the full price, and then nothing was free because I only had two used games. And I went, hey, isn't something supposed to be free? He goes, no, this is new. And I'm like, oh, I thought it was used. And he goes, oh, maybe we have a used one. And they didn't. So I said, I don't want any of these then. I barely wanted any of these. I really only want this. And then, like, as I'm walking out, I hear one of the other employees ask, like, so what was his problem? He's like, well, he thought it was used. And like, I'm not even five paces away. Why don't you wait till I go outside before you start talking about me?
You should have turned around and said, my new problem is you and your ugly face.
And I was cool about it. I wasn't like, this is ridiculous. I went, oh, I guess I didn't notice the box. It was with the used ones. I assumed it was used.
Oh,
I even apologized. I said, sorry for the inconvenience as the guy was taking the games back out of the boxes to put back in the little sleeves.
It would have been great if you said, if you're in the midst of your apologies, the guy was like, will you stop flipping out at me, please, sir?
Yeah. I'm going to have to ask you to leave. You're banned from this store.
Hey, buddy.
So I don't know, I found it kind of irritating that the guys were, like, they weren't even going to wait till I was outside. And it's like, whatever. Yeah, so. You know, screw those guys.
F that biz.
Yeah. So then I got a bunch more Beast Saga. So I got the Kingdom of the Sky starter set, which is an eagle, a hawk, and a pigeon. So three savage raptors.
That pigeon's eyes are nuts.
Yeah, it's got crazy pigeon eyes and a golden headband, which is pretty rad. And a gun.
Yeah.
So far, I have three Beast Saga figures that come with guns. The pigeon, the hamster, and the parrot, which I'll get to a little later. But I think it's crazy that some of them have guns. And everybody else has, like, swords and knives and clubs and stuff. And then there's, like, this tiny minority that's like, gun. Well, you guys are all getting up close and personal. We'll just hang back here and shoot you. Then I got individual figures, crocodile, turtle. Turtle's the best one.
What is that sold individually?
Yeah. Yeah.
It's not part of a pack.
Does BB Test still have it?
I don't know.
Maybe. The turtle is the only one everyone is talking about, so if you do see it for sale and you want it, you should probably just get it.
Some people have referred to him as a general. Some people have called him Sergeant Shell.
Oh, it says it's on pre-order from BBTS.
Maybe they're getting another batch in.
Yeah, it's only $8. I'm going to pre-order that right now.
Yeah, maybe they sold out of their first batch and they have more coming. But some people call him a general. Some people say he's a sergeant.
He's not a sergeant. Sergeants don't wear that.
No, I know. It's crazy. Yeah. Like, at least a captain. But I like to think of him as an admiral. Because, one, he's water faction. So he's not going to be a general or sergeant. Come on. And he has anchors. He has three anchors sculpted on him. On his arm gauntlets and on his hat. So he is something marine.
Yeah, he's a naval officer, which probably means he's a captain.
And he has little medals sculpted on one side of his chest, which is pretty rad. Like, a lot of these figures have these rad little details sculpted in that you don't see, like, in pictures on web stores because they're not painted or they're faint. Like, I didn't know about, like, all the anchors on this dude or the medals on his chest. And then when you notice them, you're like, oh, my God, that's rad. In, like, on his little character card that he comes with, his hat is blue. It's just green. I think it's just the green that his head is molded in. That's a little disappointing. It would have been nice if his hat was a different color than his face. But yeah, he's pretty awesome. He's heavy too. His shell adds a lot of weight. I'm kind of disappointed with the sword he comes with. Like, he comes with this skinny little scimitar, where, like, some of the other characters have just, like, these big, gnarly, like, badass-looking swords. You think, you know, someone of his rank and stature should have a more imposing weapon.
Hmm.
But, so talking to Proto Man about the fiction revolving around these guys, I guess there's some manga in Japan. And apparently the Water Faction are the villains. So that makes this... I mean, theoretically, this dude is then a bad guy. So he's like evil Admiral Turtle. And I don't know, he's just rad. And I love the turtle symbol on his character-specific die. It just looks kind of grumpy. And it's rad. And like the crocodile, he's got some... like cool rivets and stuff all over him, but yeah, turtle. I got the DX starter set, which is 6 figures. And I was browsing around BBTS looking at like the B sagas and stuff, and I would just keep thinking, like, man, the sperm whale just has this giant dopey looking smile on his giant big head, and I couldn't resist anymore. So I bought it motivated almost entirely by the whale, and then came to really appreciate like all the other figures in the set. So the whale's cool. He's big, he's heavy, got that big dumb smile on his face. The orca is I think the most bland of the group. He could have used a couple more paint apps on his head, because his eyes just disappear into the black, the predominantly black of his head, and so do his teeth. Like, just a little paint app in his mouth to whiten up the teeth would have been a huge, huge improvement.
Mm.
But he's got, like, a little skirt piece around his legs and loincloth area that kind of have, like, a Inuit kind of vibe to him. Like, it's kind of like a fur skirt thing with a little kind of tribal pattern on it, which is like one of those neat little extra sculpted details. There's a panther. Panther is definitely a girl. It is lavender and pink and hearts and high heel shoes. It's crazy. The wolf really surprised me. Like, I wasn't expecting nothing from the wolf. The wolf is so badass. Like, I expect of the land faction, the wolf is like the Wolverine of the group. Like, he's like the kind of grizzly, gnarly combat dude. His shield has like a claw on it. His sword is like this crazy double bladed thing that has a wolf head sculpted on the hilt. The sculpting on the face is just awesome. The teeth are cool. He's got like a crazy snarl. A red scar is painted over one eye. The wolf is friggin' rad. Then you got an owl. And I don't know why there's blue fire coming out of the top of the owl's shoulders, but there is. Of all the birds that I have, he's the only bird that doesn't have wings on his back. Which is kind of interesting. He has like these big flat metal wings attached to his shoulders that are just sort of hanging down and not sticking out like all the other birds have wings on their backs. Ichabod has been coveting the owl quite hard, so I was trolling him with increasingly close-up pictures of the owl's eyes. Every time he would tweet me any sort of reference to the owl, I would just tweet an even closer-in picture. I got like 3 levels deep and then stopped. And then last but not least is the parrot. I like the parrot because he is so brightly colored. He's green and yellow, and he comes with a gun. I like his gun, too. It's like a cool 4-barreled laser gun-looking thing. It's kind of rad. Just the sculpting on all these guys, like, they're doing some really good sculpting with the Beast Saga stuff. Just all the little sculpted-in details and textures on the skin, and it's just really neat. Like, the only time these guys have really come up short for me is where you could see where, oh, just like one more paint app to bring out this detail or that detail would have just put this thing another level higher and awesome. But I'm digging Beast Saga. They are cool. And then from our friends at 3A,
ba-bump,
I got three of the Caesars in the portable size, because, you know, full size, too big, too expensive, forget it. So I got the Jungler, the Deep Powder, and the 666th Sand Devil. When I picked these guys out, because they had like 12 for pre-order.
12 in like a 2-pack.
Yeah. And then like the 2-pack, if I remember correctly, was like Day Watch, Night Watch.
It's like the RIP, Rothschild Police Force.
Oh, yeah. Okay. Day Watch, Night Watch, I must have been in the regular mix. But anyway, so there was no way I was getting all of them. That wasn't going to happen. So when I was sort of pondering which ones to get, I kind of thought, well, I'm going to stick the color schemes that I already have at least one other of. And then I wanted, because there's two different style heads. There's like a big dome head and then a shorter flat head. And then some of them only have one shield, and some of them have two shields, and then there were two different kind of guns. And so I figured, I'm going to stick to color schemes I already have, and I'd like to get one of each situation. So I want at least one of each head type, one of each shoulder, one of each gun type. So I was able to pick three that fit that. So like the 666th guy has the flat head, two arm shields, and the more kind of assault rifle looking gun, and the other guys have the single shield and like the big banana clipped machine gun and the round heads. So I think 3A is improving on their paint. Like, if you look back at some of their early figures, the paint looks so primitive compared to what they're doing now. But even the way they paint the soft goods, I think they're improving on. Like, the way they paint the fabric parts is better than it was. And then just kind of more details. Like, the Deep Powder guy has a lot of writing on him. Like, on his chest. Turning around to grab it. on his chest, there's just this big square that says Deep Powder Core Third. Snowflake on top of his head, like other Deep Powders. Snowflakes on his little skirt piece. Then the Deep Powder Core Third, real big on his back skirt piece. The back of his head says Frigid Hansen, which is one of the coolest robot names yet, I think. So they all come with their big rifle, they all come with a knife, they all come with a pistol. The pistol and knife have sheaths and holsters on their belts. And all the bags, the sheath, the holster, the skirt piece all seem to be like all connected and stay well around their waist. Like, that's one of the problems with some of the other designs, where everything was held on by those tiny little hooks. Like, I don't have any kind of feeling that this stuff's like falling out of place and needs to be constantly reset and adjusted and tucked back in. And it just feels more solid. He has a toe joint too. That's good. The fingers I'm a little scared of. The fingers seem kind of...
Do the fingers feel more drop clothy or more arm strongy, would you say?
Uh, closer to drop cloth, I think.
Ah.
I would have to pull out one of my drop cloths and one of my Armstrongs and try again. I mean, these guys are bigger than a drop cloth. So the hands are bigger, but the fingers are so thin.
You got that same, that's what I meant, is like the feel of robustness. The Armstrong fingers are just so lovely, you know, just in their delivery. They feel like thick and meaty when you're posing them. And I was kind of hoping that the Caesars would end up with that setup.
No, I think these are very thin and
more
fragile. But I love the big shields on their shoulders because it just gives them a nice big flat space to put emblems. So the Deep Powder guy has a nice big snowflake. The 666 guy has those badass skulls on each shoulder. I like them.
I wish mine had gotten through customs faster, because I wanted to. In my case, I've got four of them coming. I got the two pack coming. I've got a clean one and a dirty one, and I really, really am looking forward to seeing the quality differences between the clean Caesars and the weathered Caesars.
So what's the clean one and the dirty one? Because didn't you get the Steve?
Yeah, the Steve is my clean one. The two pack are also clean. I'm gonna have a target on my head as soon as my Steve shows up. I just know.
And if anybody gets mad at you, they got their priorities screwed up. I'm a little jealous, but it's not like stupid. Jennifer Buddy sucks.
I can't believe you were serious. I've said it before. I just have weird luck with 3A's sales. Like, I just happen to be there when they turn them on. So I just walk in and everything's still in stock. I'm like, oh, I'll take this. And it all sells out like 5 seconds later. But the weathered one I have coming is the Gravedigger, because that was the one most like an Iron Panda.
Uh-huh.
Although they just announced that they're doing the retail waves, and if they do an Iron Panda version, I may sell my Gravedigger for an Iron Panda, but I'm not sure yet. I have a thing for Iron Panda, but yeah, that's what I got coming, is three cleans and one weathered.
Cute. I look forward to hearing what you think of them. But yeah, that is my off topic.
All right. I'm going to continue rewinding the clock here, and have a very specifically laid out off topic I'd like to do that will lead into GOG's off topic, a little bit of cross talk. But first up,
cross topic, hot pocket
fiction. I want to first throw a shout out to Wingnut, who asked that listener question, who's also known as Fifth Rate on Twitter. Thanks to him, I got a hold of a Nika Claptrap from Borderlands, the Nika Borderlands figures specifically. And that is a cool little toy that is really scary when you're learning how it works. Because I noticed, like, I'm not the only one who had this thing, but, you know, you're like, oh, hey, his wheel extends. I wonder how it works. And then you tear the wheel right out of its housing, and you're like, oh.
Yep.
And,
luckily... Or the first time you collapse it, you think you break it, you're like, oh, wait, it's supposed to do that. Oh, wait, both of the struts on the wheel are totally articulated.
Yeah, and you're like, oh, I can do whatever I want. Oh, I just ripped it out. Okay.
And then you realize that the stand is just a static bar, so that all the cool posing of the wheel that you can do, the stand doesn't support that because the stand doesn't move.
Well, that stuff I was okay with. I was okay with his really stuck bicep swivels because I was able to finally get them free. There were two things, though, that kind of bugged me. Number one, it's cool that his little shelf opens, but it's literally a panel, like, just sliding out on a skeletal rig. And it feels like a thing that'll break super easy, and it's also really hard to actually get it out because it's semi-paint stuck, and it's a really, really, really thin ledge that you're trying to pull out. The bigger problem on mine, though, is I didn't know he had an antenna until I watched read a whole bunch of reviews, and they said you can extend his antenna. So I was like, oh, okay. So I extend his antenna out. I have a lot of difficulties, and when I finally get it out, on mine, his antenna somehow is bent 45 degrees right in the middle. And it doesn't feel like a bendy plastic. So I'm like, what happened? So I'm just pretending my claptrap, you know, he got, someone stepped on him. And so he has a bent antenna. But that aside, like, it's a cool little figure. You know, don't go out of your way. Don't go crazy trying to find him. They're already doing one color variation that I know is on pre-order at Big Bad. But it's a really interesting little design for what it is. Like, you know, the ball-jointed eye and the posable flaps are really cool. But, yeah, the display stand's a little bit milquetoast, and it's a very easy figure to accidentally tear to pieces, and it's a lot harder to put it back together than it is to take apart, is the best way I can put it. But still, many thanks to Wingnut or Fifth Rate on Twitter for helping me out with that, because that's been something I've been looking for all year. Just earlier today, while I was out and about, I happened across the one Marvel Universe figure I want to buy every 4 or 5 months. In this case, it was Beta Ray Bill. Gog, I think we can do a little bit of crosstalk on this one.
Yeah.
And we can also do a little bit of crosstalk on something afterwards. But
I got Beta Ray Bill like hell a long time ago.
Yeah, you're the so OG Bill lover something.
Yeah, you're Bill Prime.
I was into him before he was cool.
Well, I'm a
Beta Ray hipster.
I wear thick-rimmed Beta Ray glasses. I'm going to go so far as to say I think this is my favorite Marvel Universe toy that I've handled to date. For a couple reasons. Aside from the fact that I find he gets posability sort of more right than a lot of other toys. Like, he's got a really nicely hidden thigh swivel. It's a bummer. I can't swing his hips very much outwards. But the thing that really amazes me about him, number one, posable mouth. But number two, the way his cape and shoulder pads mount onto the figure is a style I've never really seen before. And I think it works out a lot better than trying to get it to just hook around his neck. Because in this cape, his cape and shoulder pads plug into the bottoms of his shoulder blades. And I feel like that accomplishes a lot more than if they tried to have this cape just balance on him. Because now it's hooked into his back, and it can kind of move with his ab crunch. And I really dig that. So I'm giving Beta Ray Bill like full marks, maybe minus half a point because he doesn't come with a stand. And I thought these figures came with stands. But Gog, how about you? You're also the Beta Ray Club.
Yeah, I think a few waves ago they just stopped including the stands. So that was just a line-wide transition, Chris.
Well, darn, I haven't seen one of those since the Patriots played the Giants.
you almost sounded American there.
Yep.
But it's just yeah, stuff like that's a little weird. I mean, I didn't use the stands anyway, so I personally don't care. But, man, for the OCD collect, for a line that's basically geared towards collectors, for you to suddenly just make a transition like that, like, I bet it drove some people mad. So I feel sorry for those people. But, yeah. No, I like him. Like, I had said a long time ago that I was kind of done with just the random Marvel Universe purchases because I was really kind of dissatisfied with the overall fit and finish of them. Wasn't like QC or individual pieces or anything. It was just the kind of the line. I almost did it again. The line wide.
Patriots and the Giants, man. Yeah. You'll never forget. Yeah. 87.
Oh, I was 2 years off. But no, like the squishiness of the hip joints, which I think Beta Ray has that. It's not nearly as bad as some of the other ones that I've had, but it's there, but it definitely isn't.
It's more like a soft ratchet.
Right. It's not as egregious as other ones that I've had, but yeah. I agree with you completely about the cape. Like the way that it plugs in the back, I feel like his out of the package, like his shoulder pads kind of stick straight out a little too much, but that's easily remedied just by, you know, you could put a rubber band around him or something and hold him there for a couple hours, and then you plug the cape into his back, it's going to be perfect. The posable mouth on that figure is just terrific. Like, that's never going to get old for me, no matter what. It's not, you know, he's a little 3¾-inch Beta Ray Bill, but he's as far as the Marvel Universe stuff goes, he's really cool. I like him. I'm glad that I got him. And I don't know of a single for the longest time I was saying that, yeah, that's the only Marvel Universe figure I know of that I want. And I haven't even kept up on the line, so I don't know of anything else, but there's literally nothing else out there that I can think of that I want right now.
When I glance at things, all I see is every now and then a new Doctor Doom. And then I'm like, I already have a Doctor Doom.
Yeah. Well, maybe the Nova, if the Nova turns out good.
Yeah, Nova, I'm interested in. She-Hulk, I've almost bought a couple times. Because what I've heard is that, you know, She-Hulk is, other than being, like, a pretty good figure, apparently She-Hulk is the best female figure Marvel Universe has done from the couple of reviews I've read. And I'm like, I would like to see a well-done 3¾-inch female body, because, like, that's something that G.I. Joe almost does constantly. And I feel like G.I. Joe gets really close. They'll pull off a really good one now and then, but apparently She-Hulk is really well done. So I'm like, all right, well, sometime if it comes out in a pack with other figures that looks really cool, I'll keep my eyes open.
Well, let me ask you guys something about yours. On mine, the lower jaw, on his teeth. Well, first, the lower jaw might be a little misaligned on mine, or a little warped.
I didn't notice that. I didn't notice until Kryn said, "Why is his jaw crooked?" And then yeah, I looked, and I was like, "Oh."
And then on mine, that's exacerbated by the paint application didn't go on straight. So, like, the side that's kind of out of alignment, the teeth are painted up higher, and then the other side, the paint comes down low, so it just sort of amplifies the look of his jaw being crooked. So when I open the mouth on mine, it doesn't look so bad when the mouth's closed, but when it's open, it kind of looks like his jaw's going crazy. He's like, "Gah-gah."
It's not pronounced on mine too badly, but if you're looking for it, you'll see it. Yeah, it's pronounced more like a few more D's. Yeah, I mean, on mine, it's not too bad, but it definitely is a little bit off kilter. I did have the fortunate chance to come across two Beta Ray Bills, so I was able to look at the two of them and pick the one with less bent parts and slightly better paint. Thank goodness that both those things happen on the same figure. But yeah, it's a pretty cool toy. Moving on from there, I also got an Ami Ami box in the mail. This is a real prestigious item. I forgot, were you the guys I talked to about Dia Robo? I do not remember.
I don't think so.
I got
I recall.
I got some Dia Robos a while ago, and I got two of the three versions of the Fair Lady Z, and I liked the Fair Lady Z so much that I bought the third version, which is the silver version called Protoroid. Basically, it's a Matchbox Hot Wheels sized Fair Lady Z, fully licensed, and it transforms into basically a slightly more posable version of the classic Spy Changer aesthetic. A really expressive ball-jointed neck, ball-jointed shoulders, hinge elbows, and ball-jointed hips, and knees that can click about 5 degrees. It's a really cool toy line, and it's only really available on Ami Ami. I don't know why no one else is carrying it. But I would highly recommend the Fair Lady Z's. There's three of them. There's silver, there's orange, and there's police. The police version is called Roid Cop and is kind of awesome. But they're only 600 yen, and I'd really recommend any Transformers fan at least pick up one version of the Fair Lady Z. The other ones turn into, like, animals and stuff, and it's not quite as cool, but the Fair Lady Z is just a really clean, really fun, and really attractive-looking toy. Like, the silver in that photo is very indicative of how the silver looks on the actual car mode. So it's quite awesome. And packed in with it, you know, to fill out the shipping a bit more, was a Ryobot Gurren Lagann. I don't know if you guys heard, but it's a pretty good toy. I popped it open. I messed with it. I got it pretty much the day before I headed out here to Upstate, so I didn't get to mess with all of its functions, but I tried to do as many basic things as I could. I will say it's an interesting topic to discuss when one discusses how solid the figure feels, and then when one discusses how careful one may need to feel when messing with the toy. Because I find it rides a really fine line. It doesn't feel like it's easy to break, but it feels like it's easy to feel like it's easy to break. Because there's a lot of, as Gog has said before, a lot of parts on that thing move, especially when you start bending the legs. And it's glorious to behold. If there's one big compliment I could give to that Gurren Lagann, the Ryobot one, it's that aside from, like, having Figma wrists, and there was one other joint. I think it was either its neck joint or its ab crunch. It's like there's nothing on that toy that feels like other toy engineering. It feels like a very wholly original, isolated design in really cool ways. I found that on mine, nothing feels like it's going to break, although I'm terrified of the Gurren wing because it has very, very thin parts on it. I did hear from two people that they had some trouble with the hip skirt armor. Definitely the hip skirt armor on mine sort of snagged now and then, but in being careful with it, it didn't really break off. You just had to know when it was getting stuck. I have had the large shoulder pads pop off now and then because they're set using a ball socket connection that is very specific in how it's oriented. And that's really just a case of getting to know the toy better, I think.
Yeah.
The one great thing about that figure is that everything on it moves on an independent swivel or hinge of some kind. And once you realize that, posing that toy becomes a lot more interesting. It certainly is not like just super easy to just, you know, swing his arm up and have him point to the heavens. But once you realize just how everything can move and how you can have him do that pose and then rearrange everything attached to his shoulder to look more natural, it's a very interesting piece of toy engineering. Of course, you know, the gimmick of the head being attached to a kind of PERS system a la Hot Toys to have the eyeballs in the chest move around. It's very cleanly done. I was pleasantly surprised by how easy it was to swap the shades on and off. And actually quite surprised in a different way by how the Gurren wing attaches. It actually clips onto the removable backplate to a point where I think it clips on just a bit too tight. It's a little bit scary popping it on and off of that that part. Also, I don't entirely understand how its jointing system works because the outer parts of the wings can fold inwards like on the show, but the connections at the base of the backpack don't seem to fold back far enough to look like what I remember it looking like when they were stored in the show, in my limited time messing with it so far. I will say, though, the base it comes with is really high-end looking. It's a lovely toy package. It says in big, huge logo on the top of the box, it's the 5th anniversary of Gurren Lagann. You open up the front lid, and even though he's wrapped in saran wrap and whatnot, it's Gurren Lagann pointing to the heavens in the box. It's a very well-done action figure. The huge question coming up right now is, do you pick that figure or the Super Robot Shogokin? Honestly, I think that they are just far away from each other to be really a case of taste. Super Robot Shogokin is going to be a slightly more vanilla figure. It's going to have diecast in it. It's going to look like the guy on the show. And there's going to be an add-on box to add 5 billion drills to him. The Ryobot is definitely more of a slight artist interpretation on Gurren Lagann. Very slight. Mostly in the realm of a lot of his flat tempo details are actually sculpted up, and I think that's a huge improvement. The engineering is something that is really going to be great for engineering curiosity types like myself. And the nice thing about it is, even though it certainly is not indestructible, it feels really solid for the sheer number of moving parts on such a not small, but, you know, small for what it does figure. So it's a really interesting figure. I'm probably going to be able to write a ton about it when I try writing a review script, and I don't want to ramble too much here, but I will say, Gog, thank you very much for sharing your thoughts on it, both when you had the Quinjesters and was it Quinjesters?
Yes.
Yeah, Quinjesters in hand, and, you know, getting your own. Those were really great. It was great at pushing me into really wanting to get a hold of this thing because it sounded like such a great curiosity. And if you, dear listener, are really into interesting, unique, and non-easily breakable toy engineering on a collector level, you know, look into this thing because it's quite interesting what they went for. And it's just the ways that they went for what could have just been a basic posable skeleton and how they decided to vary up how that works is really cool. So yeah, definitely a thumbs up from me. It's not going to be for everyone, but it fills a really interesting niche. And, you know, Gog, I certainly do not blame you for feeling that you've pretty much found the Gurren Lagann figure for you.
Yeah. It just depends on the franchise. And again, I can't really, because I really love Gurren Lagann. Like, that series is, like, it's important to me. Like, I think that it's it's one of the better animated shows we've gotten in the past decade. I think it's not flawless, but it's close. You know, as far as what I'm looking at of a show, I think it ends great. I think being in the mecha genre, it surpasses that genre. I just think it's a terrific show, and but I don't know, for some reason I don't feel the need to own like multiple high end versions of that. Whereas like I'm getting the SRC Gunbuster. If they did a Riobot Gunbuster, it would be pre ordered. Like I would definitely get both. So I can't really put my finger on why I feel that way with the Gurren, but it's just, I don't know, maybe the design itself isn't as important to me. I don't know. But
I would definitely say, like, right now, if I had to pick and choose, like, I think that for the sheer interest that it raises with me, like, I would be going Riobot right now. Because, I mean, even over Riobone was neat, but I find Riobot, like, legitimately fascinating on many levels just from this one figure. And, you know, maybe this was an isolated case, but there was some, like, the design of the shoulders is so imaginative. And of course, you know, the leg having just like 7 to 8 pieces all sliding in tandem as you bend it. It's quite a sight to behold. Also the you know, I'm rambling now, but I mean the multi-jointed nature of the inner waist and ab crunch joints to have it be like just a normal posable robot chest or an opening and closing mouth on, you know, the face in the chest is it's really cool.
Yeah, I like how, at least in my eyes, like it, the way robots bend and work in animation is very cheaty, and I feel like this is a really good attempt at just being able to justify a real machine being able to move like that, because a robot doesn't bend like a human being, but they do in animation. And I think this does a great job of justifying how it would be able to do such things by actually making the toy do it in a realistic way without cheating.
Yeah. I think that this is a case also of a toy that, you know, in the realm of there are too many video reviews, this is one of those toys that really needs to have motion in its coverage to get across what is so incredibly amazingly interesting about it. But yeah, Riobot Gurren Lagann, I feel very happy about that purchase, especially because also the box he comes in is just so pretty. It's a very premium feeling product. And if there was the discussion, wouldn't it be cool if it had diecast? And much like Masterpiece Sideswipe, it's kind of like in very specific places it would be neat, but there's nothing about this toy that demands it. And, it's quite cool. The last things I got were a pair of very violet Glios thingies. First up, I got a custom Glios from my buddy Nice Stuff. The cool thing about this is it's actually one of the Weaponeers of Mongka figures, which I've been raving about. And what Nice Stuff did was he rebuilt it slightly to have a different little chest bubble. And, gave it a sword. This thing was actually a clear green figure, which he then dyed to be purple, and then gave multiple really just gorgeous clear coats to make it glossy. The end result is that it looks and actually feels as though it's made of glass. It's made of highly durable PVC. I've already pulled parts of the figure apart to make sure all the joints still work, and they totally do, which is something you really shouldn't do when you get these kind of customs, but I never can resist it. And it also because all the joints were so just silky smooth somehow through all these clear coats. And the flat panels on this guy literally feel like glass when you run your finger over them. He's got so much clear coat and just glossy color work done on him. He looks really cool. I got him on my way out the door coming to upstate. So I like opened him up to look at him. I caressed it a few times and put it on my shelf. I'm looking forward to taking a few better photos of it when I get back home. But it's fantastic. And the other thing I got... this is a Colgrim release. If you look at the top few posts of the Colgrim blog right now, you'll notice the theme. This thing showed up at New York Comic Con. This is just, it's the Colgrim figure, done up in a new, styling. He's made out of 4 different plastic colors with, production paint apps done on top. He is styled after Strawberry Shortcake And the interesting thing is that the PVC actually was scented to smell like strawberries. And the funny thing about this is that this is also Colgrim, who is a tall, skeletal bounty hunter who is glaring at everyone from behind a skull mask and carries dual pistols. Only now his dual pistols are pink, and he's wearing green shorts and has a pink chest. And it's a really, really cool figure. It's still on the site if you want to. If anyone wants a strawberry scented strawberry shortcake skull bounty hunter, it's $20. It's the first mid-tier DX figure that a Glios release has done, like between Glios and Colgrim. He's done like super deluxe releases that were a lot more than $20 and had a lot more paint apps, but it's really cool. I bought two of them. I opened one up and ripped it apart and rebuilt it into one of the other configurations that he's sold figures as, and it totally works. And it smells like strawberries. When you get it at first, the PVC already has a strong smell. So the PVC smell is kind of overpowering the strawberry smell. So you kind of have to pull them out of the Ziploc bag and let them air for a little while. But then when you hold them under your nose and you're just like, oh, there's a slight hint of strawberry in there. It's really cool. Also, just to homage Strawberry Shortcake out of nowhere, I think it's one of those little art toy things that I quite dig. Especially because Jesse Moore, the guy who does Colgrim, is this like tough looking dude with an enormous beard who looks like the last person in the world to do anything that has anything to do with Strawberry Shortcake. So I'm very much digging it. It's called the Fragarian Colgrim, and it smells like strawberries. Seth, you should totally get one of these to ride your badass Colgrim motorcycle.
But I already have a badass Colgrim guy with a sick scarf to ride it.
What if he needs to chill out and fight some dude, needs someone to ride his motorcycle for him? Then this person who's riding it can smell like strawberries.
Mine will fight the dude from the motorcycle.
Oh, dear.
And he will do backflips as part of his repertoire of fight moves on the motorcycle.
What does he smell like?
Ass kicking and motor oil.
And strawberries?
No, not unless he kicks somebody's strawberry ass.
God damn. Anyway, I believe that is all I got this week. So, Gog, take us out of here with your off topic.
Okay, so we already talked about Beta Ray Bill. That just leaves me with two things. The last thing in that box that writer Patho sent me was the Play Arts Kai Sam Gideon. From the video game Vanquish, made by Platinum Games, directed by Shinji Mikami, known for creating Resident Evil and a bunch of other stuff. But he's really cool. I like Play Arts Kai. I think really my only negative is some of the shading on his face is a little off. It's almost like they fake shaded some stuff around his face. So in some light, it looks really good. Sometimes it doesn't look that great because it looks awkward when that's not natural lighting. So, but it's pretty minor. Like, it's not super, super horrible, but the figure is really cool. It comes with two heads with a helmet closed and helmet open so you can see his human face. Comes with a bunch of swap out panels because he has like a rocket booster suit so that you can slide across the battlefield. The game is a third person shooter. But no, he's really good. Like I like him a lot. Now I got to get they made a bad guy from the game too. I kind of feel the need to get him. And, that guy's on sale quite a bit, so probably won't be too hard to get, but, no, he's great. Like he's missing the swing out shoulder joint that the newer Play Arts guys have, because I think this guy Sam was actually one of the first designed of the Play Arts guys. Like his prototype was shown really early in the line, so it makes sense of why he's missing that. But no, I like Play Arts guy. I think they do a good job. I wish the face sculpts were more consistent, but it's a great toy line. It's a shame that the costs are going up while they're putting more product out. I think it'll go the At least being able to, I don't know, maybe it's just the sheer amount of licenses they're getting. I don't know, but the prices are really starting to skyrocket on these things. I think they've almost doubled. But that might be due to the exchange rate too. But even in the last couple of years, I don't think it's changed that much. But they were about $40 a piece, and now they're almost $70 on average now. So
yeah, that's what's. I've seen Garrus several times, lots of him. And it's that, and his price has had me going, like, I'm going to get him, but man, like, 65 is hard to just drop on a figure, I find. I mean, he's Garrus, for sure, and that's helping, but it's also helped me decide to just not look at the Shepherds or at Ashley, because I'm like, yeah, no.
Yeah.
I don't need to spend $65 on an Ash Williams action figure.
Exactly, yeah. Agree completely, but I don't think I've had a Play Arts Kai that I regret getting, but I've also been pretty picky with them, too. There's a lot out there that I haven't had any interest in, but they're good. But I think they're getting better, too. Like with Garrus, they have a whole new hip design, whereas the Play Arts Kais, for the longest time, have just regular ball socket hips, which... haven't worked out all that great. They tend to loosen up really quickly, and it's easily fixed. You just take a little tiny piece of paper towel and put it in the middle of the socket and pop them back on, and it's good as new. It was definitely a flawed design because it happened on a lot of their figures. You move them around for like just the first day, and by the end of the day, the hips can't even support the weight of the figure. Like I said, it's really easy to fix. It's a non-issue. It was something I was prepared for. But I was very happy to see Garrus. When I got Garrus in hand, they had basically done away with that whole hip design and put in a brand new one. So they definitely saw the flaw in their design and addressed it. So that's good. But no, again, thank you so much, Rider Pathos. Your generosity is breathtaking, and I don't mean that. As an exaggeration, what you did was really kind, and I can't speak highly enough of how humble I feel for the whole thing. So, and I also got a NECA smoker, and the NECA smoker is really cool. I paid way too much for him, but I was like, you know what? Like, I saw him at retail. It's kind of fun to see him. Like, he was like $25, which I don't understand why Toys R Us is just pricing the Valve stuff so much higher than everywhere else, where... Like, several online stores have them priced, like, the same as everything else. And Toys R Us has them, like, $10 more than every other NECA figure.
Toys R Us wants Half-Life 3.
I guess, yeah. Except for, it's not like that money is going to, it's not like that money is going back to Valve. It's going to Toys R Us. But no, the smoker is awesome. Like, he's super articulated. Like, his hips and knees and everything, like, it's, like, man, he's really, really good. His clothes are all made out of a soft rubber, so like when you're posing him, like they move naturally along with everything. Like he's as articulated as you could ever think he would ever be. Everything moves, and it moves well. He comes with I guess I should have said, for the people who don't realize, he is from the video game series Left 4 Dead. It's one of the specialized zombie types. He has a long tongue that basically shoots out, wraps around your neck, and will restrain you and eventually kill you unless one of your teammates come and knock the tongue off. He's basically kind of like he lassos you with his tongue and
it makes really sexy noises the whole time.
Yeah. So he comes with two tongues. You pop one out and pop the other one in. One's kind of shorter and just hangs there, and one's really long. You could probably wrap it around the neck of another figure, which is what it's supposed to do. And they're all wire bendy, so you can pose them. He has another tentacle like coming out of the back of his head that's also poseable, which is kind of crazy. The only problem with mine, and I did some research and I haven't seen anybody else complain about it, so I don't know if I've just missed it or if I just got really unlucky, but the head on mine will not stay on. If you bend it or try to pose the neck joint at all, the head just completely pops off. Now, it's not debilitating because you can just pose the head in the direction that you want and just give it a little push and it stays there just fine. But it is a little disappointing. I need to get in there and take a look and see, because I've had problems like this on stuff before, and usually you can find where the problem is, like some mold flash or maybe something didn't fit just right and you have to shave something down and then it's fine. So I'll do a little bit of research, and if not, maybe I'll just eventually exchange it, because it is kind of annoying. But you know, I could live with it, because it's not like I'm going to be playing with him in the sandbox or anything, and he'll hold any pose I want him to. It's just, you know, it's kind of annoying when you have to take a couple extra steps to keep a fairly crucial part from coming off every time you move it. But I still really recommend it. I have been 100% satisfied, aside from that neck problem, which looks to be an isolated incident, but because like I said, I haven't seen anybody else complain about it. But the Boomer, I think the Boomer is great. Like he's cool. The Gordon Freeman, and now the Smoker. Did you see the pre-orders for the Shell from Portal 2?
Yeah,
that looks really cool. And if she's as on par with these other Valve figures I've gotten so far, she's going to be a great figure.
I'm all in on Nika's Valve. Everything I've seen, like I only own one, but I watched and read a lot of reviews of the Smoker and the Boomer, because I'm going to pick those two up. And the Smoker especially impressed me so much with what I saw in the reviews. Just like you said, like what they stuffed into what could have been a really static toy is amazing.
Mm-hmm. Yeah, I think NECA has handled this line very well. They're putting a lot of love into it. All the figures are incredibly articulated. They have tons of love. And I can't wait for more. Like, I'm looking forward to when those Team Fortress figures come out, hopefully soon. I don't remember exactly.
January, I want to say.
Yeah, probably sometime like that. So I wish they weren't as long in between releases. But it's worth the wait. But yeah. And that's all I got.
I will also say NECA is fun to watch on Twitter when, you know, like they got the questions like, so what's up with Toys R Us? They're like, yeah, we don't know.
Yeah.
Whatever. It's like, yeah, no one knows what's up with Toys R Us.
Yeah. I mean, it's not their fault. Like they sell the figures to the retailers, and the retailers buy them at a certain discounted percentage, and then stores can sell it for whatever they want, and they generally don't really have to answer to the manufacturer unless they break some sort of thing on their agreement. But you know, it's up to Toys R Us to decide for what price those figures are going to sell at. And you know, if Toys R Us right now decided that they could sell these figures for $50 a piece and they would sell out, they should sell them for $50 a piece. And that's really going to suck for the people who don't think it's worth that, but it's kind of how it works. But I mean, NECA's stuff is incredibly affordable. You know, for the most part, most of their figures are, you know, between 15 to 20 bucks. I mean, usually less than that. I'd say probably 15 to 18. And I mean, if you look at what their figures do compared to figures that are more expensive and do much less, it's generally a pretty incredible deal, I think. And I mean, it varies on a case by case basis, but you know, for a lot of their stuff, like their Gears of War 3 figures, I've only held one of them and really messed with it, but the amount of articulation and you know, all the jointage and paintwork and accessories and stuff that it comes with, then you look at like another figure for the same price or that's even more, and it's like, wow, like it doesn't even do half of what this figure pulls off. So
yeah.
I mean, and they're not perfect. I mean, their paintwork has been traditionally spotty. It's always a good idea to buy a NECA figure in person. I bought my Gordon online and got fairly lucky, but that can vary widely on their stuff. And
you got to learn how to unstick joints.
Right.
That's a very important skill.
Yep. So because of the plastic and paint that they use, their joints are often always stuck. And I've known several people that have broken NECA figures trying to get it unstuck. Look, I had that figure. I had that problem once on one of theirs. I bought their gamers or Player's Choice Ryu Hayabusa from Ninja Gaiden, and one of the elbows just didn't, zero effort. I mean, I didn't even know it was stuck. I just went to turn it, and whoop, the whole peg just sheared right off. I got it exchanged. It wasn't a big deal, but Yeah, I mean, it definitely happens, but I haven't had too bad of luck on it. I mean, aside from that, I've had plenty of stuck joints, and I've gotten them all unstuck. So, but, yep, it's just, you have to know what you're getting into, but overall, I think it's I think with the product that they offer, it's generally worth it, but.
Yeah. So, I'm going to probably grab a smoker sometime next month.
You should, he's great. He's really good.
They're all chilling out of 401 games for pretty good prices. So I'm going to hit that up. But for now, that is WTF and TFW episode 227. If you'd like to leave us a listener voicemail, our inbox number is 318-775-9830. That's 318-775-9830. That's 318-775-9830. That's been Gog and Seth along with me. And we're going to talk to you later on WTF at TFWE.
Come on, suckers.
What the f*** it means, but you got some badass perpetrators that are here to stay.